people should be free to enter into any kind of relationship they want to enter into.
People should be free to enter into the relationships that they choose.
I think different states are likely to come to different conclusions, and that's appropriate.
When it comes to conferring legal status on relationships, that is a matter left to the state.
I don't think there should necessarily be a federal policy in this area.
This message brought to you by Lynn and Dick Cheney. This is the Quality News Network. In his traditional end-of-the-year news conference today, President Bush said he still believes we will win the war in Iraq, although he backed off statements he made earlier suggesting sending thousands of additional troops there, a move the Pentagon opposes. The president says he wants to increase the size of the Army and Marine Corps overall. The latest CNN poll finds only 28% of Americans support President Bush's handling of the Iraq war. A record number of Americans, 70%, disapprove of how the president has handled the war. 2 days after being sworn in as U.S. Defense Secretary, Robert Gates is in Baghdad. He is taking an on-the-ground tour of the war zone and discussing strategy with top U.S. and Iraqi commanders. 15 people were killed and 41 were wounded from explosions in that city today. Also in Baghdad today, police found 76 bullet-riddled bodies around the capital. One of them has been identified as an Iraqi army officer. The presence of slain people dumped around the capital has been a daily spectacle in Baghdad over the past several weeks. The U.S. commander in the Middle East has resigned. Stepping down will allow the new defense secretary to appoint his own commander in the region. At the UN, Secretary General Kofi Annan warned against military intervention in Iran. Annan says nations should use diplomacy to convince Tehran to discontinue its uranium enrichment. He says using military might would be, quote, unwise and disastrous, end quote. Also at the UN, the Security Council has approved protocols for individuals and groups to appeal being placed on a list accusing them of having ties to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Currently, there is no procedure to correct mistakes or remove names from the sanctions list. In Gaza, a ceasefire put into effect continues to hold. Gun battles between rival Palestinian parties yesterday killed 14 and wounded dozens, including school children caught in the crossfire. Freezing rain on Mount Hood, Oregon, hampered early search efforts for the two missing climbers today. The search resumed once the storm passed, with rescuers trying to find discoloration in the snow identified yesterday by friends of the missing climbers. Most of Colorado has been hit by a major snowstorm, along with parts of Nebraska and Kansas. Airline flights have been canceled at Denver International Airport, and some highways have been closed. There are blizzards warnings posted by the National Weather Service for the area, which could see between 2 to 3 feet of snow. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news is next.
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why I got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does
yes.
that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both.
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
73% of Americans think global warming is a serious problem. That's according to the latest Rasmussen report. The cause of global warming divides Americans, though. 46% think human activities are to blame. 35% say it's caused by natural planetary trends. A Massachusetts lawmaker has introduced a bill banning artificial trans fats from restaurant menus statewide. The legislation is similar to one now in effect in New York City. That municipal law forces all restaurants, including fast food chains, to stop frying food in trans fats or face fines. Palm Incorporated, which makes Trio smartphones, reported a steep drop in quarterly profits and revenues. The company cited increased competition and higher energy costs. Today, President Bush said he supports an increase in the minimum wage backed by Democrats. However, he favors it if it is linked with tax and regulatory relief for small businesses. Also today, the president signed a $40 billion bill that extends individual and business tax breaks. The bill also normalizes U.S.-Vietnam trade relations. Euronext shareholders have voted in favor of a $14 billion plan to merge with the New York Stock Exchange. The deal creates the first transatlantic equities market. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.60 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 7 points, the Nasdaq was down 2 points, and the S&P 500 was down 2 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, ho, ho, howdy. Six minutes after the hour, and it is, of course, Wednesday. I'm Brother Bob Kincaid. Tonight, of course, is the night of the week that we dedicate to the Cathedral of Common Sense. It is, in fact, Prayer Meeting Wednesday on Head On.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn straight. We've got some fun stories of religious excess, right-wing religious excess. Before we get into that, I want to start out. I mentioned to you from time to time, and I hope you'll go by and sign up for his updates, because our good friend Eugene Fienerman at FienermanWorks.com, FienermanWorks.com, FienermanWorks.com. Our good friend Eugene has a great wealth, a veritable treasure trove of historical knowledge, and he's got a tremendous wit, which he will be proud to tell you was honed not at some highfalutin, high-toned Ivy League institution, but yea, verily, at a state school. I believe he is an Illini, unless I miss my guess. So run on by FienermanWorks.com and click on Your RDA of Irony. You'll get little gems in your email on a daily or almost maybe sometimes a couple of times a day basis. And this one, we reported last night to you that Dear Leader has announced that he wants to increase the size of the army in Iraq. Now, I just shot right by it, but oh no, not Eugene. No, not our buddy Eugene. I got this little gem from him today. Dateline, Washington. Bush, U.S. needs to increase army size. President Bush says the U.S. needs to increase the size of the Army and Marines, and says strategy and tactics in Iraq will change to meet the situation on the ground. Says our good friend Eugene, taller soldiers and Marines might either impress or intimidate the Iraqis into behaving themselves. Halliburton has just received the contract to supply growth hormones to our troops. Our enlisted men will also receive male enhancement drugs. This will be part of a new enlistment drive to recruit gay officers, as Mary Cheney has tried repeatedly to tell her father, Alexander the Great, actually won in Iraq. It's beautiful. I couldn't do that at infinite bobs and infinite typewriters. I couldn't come up with that. You've got to have the mind turned as the Jeopardy champion that Eugene is, to see things in that particular light. Another story came out in the last 24 hours indicating that 9 out of 10 Americans have had premarital sex. Now, is that surprising? For me, no. Because anytime you've got a puritanical country like the United States of America, constantly talks about how dirty sex is, you can just about guess that there's a lot of sex going on for them to be talking about it that much. But in an interesting corollary to that story that was little noted, it turns out that among Christian fundamentalists, some of them actually were having sex with other adults. Ba-dum-bum. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, that's the one thing I've never learned is how to work a monologue in terms of, you know, the transition from one one-liner into the next. But, yeah. If you listen to them, they say that far more than 1 in 10 Americans is a fundamentalist. So that means, oh dear. Okay, Bob, there's another one. Don't laugh at your own jokes. Now I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've got audio for you from Dear Leader tonight. I don't have the patience for it anymore. I do have about 15 pages of transcript of his year. that was the year that's gone. Press conference today, and you know it was a beauty. This week I went to the Pentagon for the swearing-in of our nation's new Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates. Secretary Gates is going to bring a fresh perspective to the Pentagon, and America is fortunate that he has agreed to serve our country once again. I'm looking forward to working with him. Yeah, I tell you, the Senate almost erupted in open applause when he said that, no, we're not winning in Iraq. But now it's the way it is with these people. Now he's all confirmed, and he's right on the bush. He's right on the bush train, isn't he? Yeah, we're going to increase the size of the military. Yeah, it's going to be 6'5" now. Yeah, we're in negotiations with Yao Ming. It's going to be a very big military. A little bit of Iraqis, big military. God. It just hurts, doesn't it? And, but of course, what do we expect from this man now? He did say that every night I think about the people, I think about our soldiers, I think about the loved ones that are being lost every night. But we will secure victory in Iraq. I know I've said it before. Maybe it becomes tiresome. I apologize. I just want to know what the hell victory in Iraq means. I mean, are we going to kick a last-second field goal? Put the puck into the net with 2 seconds remaining? Do you believe in miracles? Is this the Olympics? Ugh. Oh, let's see. A little bit more from Dear Leader. I'm going to make you this promise. My administration will work with Republicans and Democrats to fashion a new way forward that can succeed in Iraq. I'm not telling you what success means. I'll tell you when we're doing it. It's kind of like Potter Stewart with pornography. I don't know what success is, but I know it when I see it. We'll listen to ideas from every corridor. We'll change our strategy and tactics to meet the realities on the ground. We'll never lose sight that on the receiving end of the decision I make is a private, a sergeant, a young lieutenant, or a diplomat who risks his or her life to help the Iraqis realize the dream of a stable country that can defend, govern, and sustain itself. Jesus, what? A year ago, that was an Iraqi democracy, wasn't it? Did you hear that? Now, I was monkeying around with the voice and everything, but I didn't take any of the words out or put any in. There wasn't a blessed word in there about an Iraqi democracy, was there? No. Iraqi democracy. Well, that's so mission accomplished. Oh, let's see, what else do we have here? The American people expect us to keep America competitive in the world, so we must work to assure our citizens have the skills they need for the jobs of the future and encourage American businesses to invest in technology and innovation. The American people expect us to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and increase our use of alternative energy sources. Why then did the good-for-nothing Republican Congress and this good-for-nothing Republican president not get busy with real means of making alternative energy technology available to every American who's building a home? You know, we have lost in the last, oh, what, 2-3 years, how many kilo acres or you know, how much farmland have we lost to the McMansion industry? You know, we've been told that we have a housing, we had a housing boom, and then it turned into a housing bubble, and now it's a housing bust. How many of those homes were built with solar panels in the roof? How many of those homes were built facing south to take advantage of passive solar? How many of those homes were built with geothermal technology? All that technology exists. It's real. It's not high tech. I forget where I was reading or who I was listening to. The Siemens company of Germany is building a windmill factory in Iowa. How hard would it be to develop sustainable wind power technology so that, say, oh, one wind turbine could go up with it? Yeah, you know, I'm just guessing here. So that each house would have its own individual wind turbine. You know, not a huge one, not one of these industrial ones. No. But enough to augment. Can you imagine what would happen on Capitol Hill if we started talking about these things realistically? There would be an army, a veritable phalanx of lobbyists coming out of the American power industry, the coal-burning power industry, banging on congressmen's doors. What do you mean, windmills? I often mention that West Virginia is a little microcosm, a petri dish, if you will, for what will happen in the rest of the nation. And we talk about wind power and wind technology. Well, I've mentioned it before. I'll keep hammering on it. We see what's going on right now in that regard, and what we can expect in the rest of the nation if there's not some change. You know, we've got a Democratic governor in this state. Nice guy, very nice guy, Joe Manchin. Policy wise, we don't see eye to eye. Joe's a nice guy, though. Democratic governor. We've got a Democratic House of Delegates. We've got a Democratic Senate. We've got a Democratic State Supreme Court. Most of the county commissions are Democratic. And yet, we are the Greenbrier County Wind Power Project is fighting for its very existence. I'll have to get some in-state help, but the last I checked, state government was trying to jack a 15% overall tax rate out of them. We don't do anything approaching that to coal. See, that's the problem. He's a real nice guy, our governor, but he's also a coal broker. Conflict of interest, a little bit. And the people of Greenbrier County, oh, it's going to destroy our viewscape, this windmill. It will destroy our viewscape. Lovey, we moved down here from the urban canyons of New York City to have some wide open spaces. You know, take Manhattan, just give me that countryside. And now, 20 miles away, where we can't even see them, they're going to put up some gall-danged windmills. Whatever shall we do? Can you imagine the view pollution? Of course, if you look at the map, you'll find out Greenbrier County is just a little bit too far away to hear the blasting from the one Hiroshima's worth of explosives that are used on southern West Virginia every approximately 9 days to blow the hell out of our mountains to get the coal that the Southern Company, which comprises things like Alabama Power and Georgia Power and Mississippi Power, that they use to fire their dirty old coal power plants that, you know, dump tons of mercury into the air and fun stuff like that. So we're struggling, but you know, and these are huge, amazing windmills. They're actually they're tourist attractions out west, these windmill farms. Here in West Virginia, though, in Greenbrier County, they're view pollution. It's awful, I tell you. And we can't even see them, and our view is polluted. Dear God. It's not what we came here for. They put it in our backyard. Well, not really in their backyard. It's 20 miles away. But, of course, again, as I mentioned, the CSX Corporation owns the Greenbrier Resort, one of the real old hoity-toity resorts. And the Greenbrier and CSX, who hauls more coal than just about anybody else in the eastern seaboard, they've decided that wind power is bad. It's bad, I tell you. So there's a lot of arm twisting going on, but can you imagine in all the houses of the housing bubble, what would our energy independence picture look like if some sort of wind generation project was attached to every housing subdivision? What if every house in these subdivisions, especially in the warmer climes, had solar on south facing roofs. How about air conditioning and heating systems that tap into the natural heating and cooling of the very earth itself with geothermal? And this pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout stands up and says, "The American people expect us to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and increase our use of alternative energy sources." See, that's the problem. When George Bush thinks about an alternative energy source, what he's really saying is, when I say alternative, I consider one of the best alternatives to fossil fuels to be nuclear. I tell you what, let's go to the phones. 22 minutes after the hour, and let's join our good friend Andrew calling from New York. Andrew, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Oh, you know, I'm just getting started.
Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, all that, whatever applies. If none applies, that's cool, too.
Every last one of them.
Yes. Harry Reid, I know last week I called up and I ranted about him putting those earmarks in there and all of that.
Yeah, and it just got worse, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was like, you know, I said, okay, that's a flip-flop. Now he's got some major flip-flopping going on with the troops. What is going on with him? At one minute, he's open to the idea of putting more troops in, and today he's talking about he doesn't want to put any more troops in.
Well, I'd like to think that maybe we had some effect. I started reading that stuff over the weekend, and it's all me. It's all me, Andrew. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all on me. But no, people from all over the United States, as far as I could tell, were writing, emailing his email server, mm-hmm. telling him hell no, you know, more won't go.
Yeah, pretty much what they were telling him is the old Tuskegee Airmen mantra, one of their mantras. I guess it was a song called "Straighten Up and Fly Right."
Yeah, well,
that's what he has to do. I mean, he has to understand that, you know, as a result of the midterm elections. He should know that the American people has his fix. And that's the bottom line. So we want out. You got to get our troops out of Iraq. Tired of seeing our boys and girls getting blown up over there just because somebody wants to make a little bit of coin. I think they made enough coin already. And if they get out, maybe we'll let them keep that coin if they just pull out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, that's a very good observation, Andrew, because the longer we stay, the more, you know, at some point, disaster is going to strike, you know, wholesale disaster.
Exactly. And
it'll be harder to hang on to those profits.
Yeah, it will. And, you know, it's bad enough, but they need to, Reid needs to understand, the Democrats, Pelosi, all of them, need to understand that the American people put them there, and we say this over and again to do the job of getting our troops out of Iraq. And we can't fix nothing here, okay? We can't fix the Patriot. We can't fix none of that until we end this illegal occupation in Iraq.
Well, it does seem like it's got to start somewhere, and that's certainly a reasonable place.
And that is a reasonable place because we're steadily funneling money in there, so you can't do nothing about the economy. We're steadily, they just asked for another, what, $99 billion or whatever?
Yeah, Dennis Kucinich kind of mentioned that last week, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, and you got to pull. We can't fix our economy here or try to make any kind of changes as far as green energy or whatever as long as we're pumping dollars into that, you know, debacle over there. And, you know, that's the bottom line. So it's got to start with Iraq, and Kucinich is the only member of Congress who has been adamantly against Iraq from the very beginning.
Yeah, see, he does, and that's I don't know if America realizes that yet. I hope America does, and or I hope we can help America to realize that. He's nobody could send a little young right wing Republican operative to a Dennis Kucinich speech in a dolphin costume for flipper. That you couldn't do that. You know, I saw them do that to John Kerry. They will do it to Hillary because she was for the war before she was against it. Now, to Hillary's credit, she did come out over the weekend, Andrew, and she said, no more additional troops. I'm not for that.
Yeah, well, you see that I'm down with Kucinich, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Kucinich has been against this war. He's an intelligent man. And another thing is the whole thing where they said under his leadership when he was mayor, the city of Cleveland, was it?
Yeah.
Had a budget crisis or something?
Oh, they went bankrupt.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, oh, you know.
Why? You know why? Because the corporate banks he was dealing with wanted to privatize the utility, the Mooney, I think.
Yeah, the Cleveland Municipal Power and Light.
Yes, and they wanted to privatize that, and he was against that.
And as a result of him saying, no, you can't have the Muni, they said, then we won't extend you $50 million on your line of credit. We're going to withhold that. We've been putting it out there for you all along, but we're going to withhold it and drive you into bankruptcy so that we hopefully can get our hands on your public utility.
Exactly.
Well, they didn't. Muni just I was just reading the other day, Muni, and it's got a new name, celebrated its 100th year of public service to all all the residents of the greater Cleveland area.
And that is all due to Kucinich's foresight.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I dealt with this, oddly enough, Andrew, I dealt with this in a little bit of a discussion with someone who was on the Democratic side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, saying, well, you know, he's unelectable because they'll always hammer him about that situation. And I said, when you get right down to it, Dennis Kucinich was mayor of Cleveland when he was 30.
Yep.
What was John McCain doing when he was 30? John McCain was bombing peasants from 40,000 feet up.
Exactly.
What was Hillary Clinton doing? She was law school, maybe, or just getting out of law school. Her and Bill starting off their marriage. Cool, fine. What was Joe Biden doing when he was 30?
I don't have no idea.
Me either. What was Rudy Giuliani doing? What was Mitt Romney? You know, I don't know. He was 30. You know, he's a bishop in the Mormon church. Maybe he was getting, at 30, he was getting fitted for his sacred underwear or something. But the fact of the matter is, of everybody on the in the political fray right now, in consideration of what's going to go on in 2008, only Dennis Kucinich has been committed to publicly serving the American people and doing it not for profit, but for the right thing, for his entire adult life.
And I think that's something good to run on.
Oh, it absolutely is. You know, and you get this stuff about, well, you know, he doesn't look good enough. Or, yeah.
That he doesn't look that bad. Everybody's talking about, he doesn't look good enough. You know, you got
somebody. Now, get the $5 bill out. Look at that handsome dude.
Exactly. Look now. Look at all the goodies. You know, look at the good-looking boys that we've had in there since. Now, recently.
Oh, the Ronald Reagan had rugged good looks.
So-called good-looking. I mean, hey, America has to wake up. I mean, hey, Kucinich is going to be better for your pocket.
Yeah.
Kucinich is going to be better for you staying alive. Kucinich is going to be better for America, and he can help mop this mess up, and the first step in doing that is getting the hell out of Iraq.
You know, we have these conversations, Andrew, and it just makes sense to me.
And that's it.
It's so strange to trot it out to say a bunch of weirdo, the 22 percenters, as I like to call them. And they just start screaming, "Oh God, we can't leave Iraq," and I say things like, "Look, you know, it's going to be the same whether we leave now or leave later. The only difference is the number of American dead." Well, you don't necessarily know that. Well, I know there's going to be more American dead if we leave later.
Okay. Well, I can put it like this, Bob. Well, Kucinich supposedly lacks in looks. His wife more than makes up for it. Come on, you got to give it to her.
Definite little golf clap from his lady. Yeah, yeah.
Haven't had one of those in a while. No knock on anybody else that was in there, but.
Well, yeah, or is in there now.
Exactly.
Lupe, get me a cigarette and another margarita.
Hey, here you go, hon. Please. All right, Bob.
Andrew. Thanks so much. You take care.
Yep, you too.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
Now, I don't have any problem at all saying that I will be with, and you know, this is I can't by any means obligate anybody else in on the network, but as far as my show is concerned, I will be with Dennis Kucinich until Dennis Kucinich is either president of the United States or someone else is, and I've got the credibility to say that because I've been on board since early 2004, maybe a little bit before that, when I started reading and hearing his speeches. We have got to have somebody in the White House that wants to be in the White House for some other reason than their own personal aggrandizement. I suppose there has to be a little bit of ego involved to make you pursue the White House. But we are at a place in America where the next occupant of the White House is going to have a hellish hard job. And it's not going to be any place for any kind of vanity. It's going to be a place for a person who is ready to roll his or her sleeves up, get out the elbow grease, and start working. We're talking about sweat of the brow work. We're talking 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night working. Because the presidency is a job that is far beyond the average. I wouldn't. Would you take the presidency? I wouldn't take the presidency. It's a miserable damn job. Was it Harry Truman or Dwight Eisenhower said he wouldn't wish it on his worst enemy? So you've got to have a really, really special human being in there, because we've got things that have to be solved now. Get out of, over and over. I'm sorry, if I don't mean to bore anyone. Get out of Iraq now. Healthcare now. The Employees Free Choice Act now. Energy independence now. How about instead of tax breaks for companies that do nothing and produce nothing, and for people who don't even work, how about tax breaks for the middle class? How about making it income tax deductible when a prorated portion of your home, when you buy or build a new home that is energy independent, and you can stick your middle finger in the air up at the power company and go, "Yeah, don't need you." And an entire Americans in their thousands can stand at the docks and watch the Saudi oil tankers come in and go, "Don't need you," because they're running on biodiesel. They're a hybrid, and getting their gas at old Citgo. You know how it is. I'm an idealist. But I find that idea of an independent America very, very, very appealing. Not an isolated America. An independent America. More along the lines of what George Washington was talking about when he said, "Do business with them, sure. But don't get wrapped up in their wars and their struggles and their colonialism and all their crap. Be the nation that you have been founded to be." See what you can do for yourself. Let's go back to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Cassie, calling from Texas. Hey, Cassie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm good. How's your Christmas going?
I got one more day of school.
Ah, then you're free.
Yeah. And then I can hang out with my friends and shop and do stuff.
Well, fun.
And whatever.
Yeah.
So, I was calling to say that I think that I live in Texas,
mm-hmm.
and we have a ton of sunshine here.
Right.
And we don't have enough solar panels on things. I think that all the houses should have it and the apartments and stuff.
Well, it only seems like common sense, Cassie, when you sit down and you write the check for the power bill out or pay your bills online or whatever, however you do it. That's money that's just thrown down a rat hole. That's money that can stay in individual, and it's not just Texas, it's all over the country. That's money that can stay in individual family budgets. That's money that could go into the kids' college fund. It can be used for any number of things, but as long as it's paying for monopolistic power company profits, it certainly doesn't do anyone else any good.
The school system is putting them on every time they build something new,
mm-hmm.
every time they fix something up. They're putting on solar panels.
Well, you know, there's a great account of that in a documentary that came out a couple of years ago. It's still available, and I think the website is still up. It's called Kilowatt Hours, and instead of H-O-U-R-S, it's O-U-R-S, Kilowatt Hours. And there's an account in there of the school system in Clarksville, Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And they cut their school energy expenditure by millions of dollars just by doing little things like changing the light bulbs from incandescent to fluorescent. Or
well, we have all of those short light bulbs with the fluorescent circle ones.
Yeah,
spirals.
Yeah, right.
We have those in all of our lamps that will take them.
Well, they save tons of money.
We can't put it in the bathroom because it's a different shape, but we have it in all of the other ones.
Well, that shows that there's some forward thinking going on. Good for your school board. Another one of the Clarksville school system, they just started turning the computers off at the end of the day instead of leaving them run all night.
Uh-huh.
And saved oodles of money. It's a great film because it addresses what we can do as a society and what we can do as individuals. And I think the website is still up, kilowatthours.org. You can get the DVD. You can show it to your civic groups. You can show it to your friends. There's no dirty words in it. You might even be allowed to show it at your school, Cassie.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be good. John Fox was on the other day talking about the swamp coolers,
mm-hmm.
and talking about how you can have an evaporation system and it saves a lot of money and you don't need air conditioning until it gets really hot. And I asked my teacher about it, and he said nobody uses them anymore. He said it's something that they used in the past, and now everybody just uses air conditioning. But it seemed to make so much more sense.
Well, depending on where you are, it does make sense. If you can make use of it. And see, there are technologies that have gone by the boards or by the wayside, and they're not useful anymore. Well, as the power bills go up and energy becomes harder to come by, those older technologies that were deemed to be, anachronistic or obsolete may come back from that obsolescence.
So how come people feel like they need such big houses? I mean, if it costs so much to heat a house or to air condition a house, why don't people just live in a smaller space? I mean, what is it about Americans that we all think we need to live in something huge?
What an interesting question from someone who is sitting in the middle of Texas, and I'm not being mean to you. But,
hey,
you know,
I live in a little apartment. We have 750 square feet. We're doing our part.
Yeah, but, everything's bigger in Texas.
Right. No, I mean, some of my friends live in huge houses.
Well, yeah.
Huge.
And I mean, that's not limited to Texas. That's We started out on the Eastern Seaboard and created this concept of manifest destiny that moved us all the way to the Pacific Coast. And all along the way, we had all this room, and bigger is better, bigger is better, bigger is better. We invented the huge automobile.
Mm-hmm.
We invented the huge SUV. There's something about bigger. It's a status thing in the United States, Cassie. If you've got a big house, that must mean that God likes you better, or you're able to more conveniently flaunt the fact that you've got more money than the next guy. On the other hand, if you've got a family of six living in 900 square feet, it gets a little cramped.
Six is different, but I mean, I have a lot of friends who live in really big places, and they're like an only child, or there's just two of them. And I don't know. It's just, but there's like other stuff that you can do. I know somebody else who they're fixing up their house and making changes, and they put in these really thick windows.
Mm-hmm.
They have three different panes of glass.
Right, and
so that they don't lose all the air conditioning out the window.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that we can do if we want to do them, if we're serious about it. And just a little boring history lesson, something I've mentioned from time to time. One of the first official acts of Ronald Reagan when he became president of the United States was to tear the solar panels off the top of the White House, and that was a symbolic gesture. That was so stupid. Yeah, it was. It was incredibly stupid. Of course, he was an incredibly hateful, stupid man. But along those lines, that was a signal to the rest of America that we were not going to worry about being energy independent, because there's a notion that if you ask the American people to turn their lights off, somehow that's too much sacrifice for the average American. I don't see it as sacrifice. I see it as saving money.
Yeah.
I mean, what if I'm lighting a room that I'm not in, I might as well just be setting fire to the money, shouldn't I? Isn't it about the same thing?
Right. Well, I mean, sometimes you want a light on for some other reason, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, if you set the timer if you're away from the house so the burglars will think that somebody's home. I remember all of that. Or maybe you got plants in the room, or maybe the ambient heat from the light bulb is enough to keep the room comfortable, something like that. I understand all that, but just our general mindset toward energy, that there will always be plenty more where that came from, has got to come to an end. That's one of the things I don't get with conservatism, Cassie, is that they want to be, we're conservative, we're careful with our money, but if you tell them that maybe it's time to start acting like cheap energy is not forever. Oh, no, you're pessimistic. That's not American. We can have all the energy we want. We use 25% of the world's energy on 5% of the world's population. At some point, does that not have to come into balance?
Yeah. Are they doing anything with water, too? With water that's going downhill or going down a river? Are they still...
Well, there's always hydro. Now,
it's like we have so much sunshine and so much wind, and I mean, we don't have a lot of wind here, but in other places, and water, it's like, why don't we just use what's already here? Why do we keep needing to...
Right, and for the most part, geothermal is available all over the country, whether it's Texas or Montana or California or Pennsylvania. We've got some geothermal problems getting to geothermal in West Virginia because we've been so profoundly undermined that you can't really get at it in some places, but geothermal is almost universally available. Hydroelectric is brilliant. Hydroelectric power, Cassie, brought the area where I grew up literally up out of almost Stone Age conditions. The people of North Alabama and Southern Tennessee were constantly afflicted by floods, by droughts, by mosquitoes. It was just an awful place. But hydroelectric was put in on the Tennessee River and turned it into a paradise. Now, hydroelectric's a little bit touchy because some environmentalists say that it's a bad idea to change the natural contours of a watershed and that you should just let it work out the way it works. But in places like where I grew up, the Tennessee was a vicious terrible river to try to use for transportation, or any, and now it's a transportation artery. So, you know, there's some balancing that has to go on, and there's no
you need to look at it and not just buy oil from Saudi Arabia. I mean,
right.
Like, it doesn't, you know, maybe let the scientists decide whether it's better to use water or wind here and water there and sun here and whatever, but it has to stop being oil.
Well, I think, and it's going, that's the other thing, it's going to stop being oil and coal, because it's not forever. If you look, one of the big lies that the coal industry tells in the United States, Cassie, is that, oh, we've got 500 years of coal. Or sometimes you'll hear them say, we've got 276 years of coal. Well, okay, so we're just going to keep screwing the people that live in year 277? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, you know, whether it's 500 or 200 or whatever, it's going to run out. You know, because that's the difference in large part between environmentalists, progressives, liberals, Democrats, and their Republican counterparts. Republican counterparts are strictly carpe diem types. You know, seize the day. Everything is today and nothing for tomorrow. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. George Bush was asked what history would think of him, and he said, well, I don't really care, because when history writes what it thinks of us, we'll all be dead.
That's stupid.
It is.
I'm in the generation that's supposed to be just thinking of the next 8 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, teenagers were not supposed to be thinking of the future, but I think about the future more than that. Like, I don't always know what I'm going to be doing in it, but we need to take care of it.
Well, certainly.
We need to recycle. We need to do all of that stuff. I mean, I read a thing on the internet the other day about how many hundreds of thousands of pounds of stuff that people throw out at Christmas,
mm-hmm,
could be recycled, like the wrapping paper and the ribbons and all of that. I mean, I take on anytime I get something that's wrapped in ribbons, I take the ribbons and I put them on hairbrush. I mean, I don't throw them out, but there's some, like, thousands and thousands of tons of stuff that people throw out at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah, and
that's not what we should be doing.
Paper and plastic, biodegradable and non-biodegradables, it's one of the things that we face here in West Virginia, Cassie. We have a hard time recycling here because we're so rural. The garbage that we put out, if we don't separate it out for our own and take it for recycling ourselves, you know, garbage just picks it up, and everything goes in the same landfill, and, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Oh, no, here we have different bins for different things at the apartment, and then they just pick up, I mean, they pick up the recycling and put it, I'm assuming they recycle it. To be honest, I don't know what happens after we put it in the bin.
Well, if you're separating it out, theoretically they're supposed to be recycling it, and it only makes sense. You know, I can't think of anybody on earth. You say that, you know, your generation is only supposed to be thinking about the next eight minutes. I can't think of anybody that should be thinking about the next 30 years more than your generation. And I'm not being an old fogey telling you, you know, I hope you understand.
Right.
Because my generation and the generation in front of me is doing everything in our power to make your generation's life hell. Most of us just are. I'm sorry, you know, not the people listening to this program, not me, but there's a lot of conservatives out there that don't give a tinker's damn about what happens to you, Cassie, or your generation. They don't care if you've got jobs in America. They don't care if your potential future.
They don't even care if we eat. I mean, they're going to cut money out of the breakfast and lunch program. I mean, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Yeah, it kind of makes you want to, you know, kick the furniture, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be frustrating.
Kick them.
Well, yeah, okay. I understand, and yeah, I have those moments too myself.
I'm not gonna do it.
No. So how final exams gone?
I have one more left. I nailed geometry. I have world geography tomorrow. I already finished English and Spanish and science, biology.
So how's your Spanish?
Terrible.
Oh.
It's not my best class.
Okay, but you nailed geometry.
I did.
I'm, you know, that just makes me proud to hear a young woman say, I just killed on the geometry exam, because one of the things that educators have isolated and identified is that somewhere around fifth grade, bad things start happening to American girls with mathematics.
You know, I have heard that, but that's not me. I mean, I'm not going to pretend that I'm not good at something I'm good at, and I'm good at math.
That's great, you know, because that's going to open doors down the road that you may not have even contemplated. And the mindset that you have in terms of being engaged in looking towards your future, the math and the science background are absolutely invaluable. And I'm so proud of you, and I'm so proud to know that you set the geometry exam up and just knocked it down.
Yeah, you know what we did after the exam?
What's that?
We made three-dimensional, we got wallpaper,
mm-hmm.
and we used compasses to make three-dimensional figures on the wallpaper, and then we cut them out and folded them on the lines and glued them together, and we made Christmas tree ornaments out of dodecahedrons and octahedrons and pyramids and stuff like that, and we put the little hooks to make them into Christmas tree ornaments.
That is just so incredibly cool.
Because we finished the exam,
so you weren't just
we still had 2 hours till the bus, because everybody in my geometry class has sixth period lunch.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have an exam afterwards, but we still had 2 hours till the bus.
So this wasn't just Euclidean plane geometry. You were dealing with the X, Y, and the Z axis in some of this.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. I'm in the honors geometry class.
That's just amazing. That just thrills me to death.
Yeah.
So you've got geography left.
Maybe I'll mail you a Christmas tree.
Oh, that'd be fun. That would we'd certainly hang it on the tree. And you've got geography left, you say?
Yes.
And that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow.
And then you're free.
And then I'm done. Finished till January 8th.
And you are a sophomore, right?
No.
Junior.
Freshman. Ninth grade.
Oh. I plan on us being on the air when you're a senior, and I foresee you doing such good things in that school environment, Cassie.
Well, I'm having fun with it.
You should. And have yourself a Merry Christmas, okay?
Merry Christmas to you too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. She just makes me proud, you know? All right, let's go to our good friend Susan in Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
How are you?
I'm an idiot when it comes to math. Sorry.
Oh, so am I. That's why I have so much. That's why I'm so proud of what Cassie's doing, because it means that, it means that I'm not rubbing off the wrong way or something.
My daughter's the math geek. I'm the computer geek.
The
math teacher.
I had the same kind of geometry I think she's going through when I was a sophomore in high school, and it was somewhere around week three. It's over.
Well, I got hit with, this is going to date me, but I got hit by the new math when it hit.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I was just starting to get the hang of everything, and then they brought in the new math and shut everything all that. No, oh God. Anyway, that's not the reason I called. I want to extend an invitation.
All right.
I put a little goodie up on the blog a while ago. And Skype is going to remain free until the 31st. So what I've been doing is I have been calling the entire House of Representatives.
Right. That's a bunch of people.
Yeah. And because of Bush and his putting more troops in there. And this, I'm not calling just the Democrats, I'm calling the Republicans too. And I'm still saying, hey, no, this is not good. And what I'd like to do is urge people, Skype is free, you can download it, and until the 31st you can use it for free. And call all over the United States. Join me. People are really impressed when they hear that you're calling the entire House.
Yeah, but how many other Americans are doing that right now, do you reckon?
I don't know. But you
and
know.
See, that's one of the things, Susan. You've taken this obligation upon yourself, and I think it's one of the places where we as progressives can get way out in front of anybody in the conservative movement, because the way the conservatives approach it is they get Richard Mellon Scaife to give $20 million to an organization that's going to set up a webmail server so that you do it through them, you know, kind of the way I have fun with the American Family Association.
Yeah. Well, if I could find a way to get hold of Congress's email addresses, I would set up my own email list and proceed to mail them about once a day with an email from me.
But the fact that you are doing this, I guess, how could we put it? You're doing this manually.
Yes.
It's a labor. It's a labor of love, and it's a labor of commitment. And when you tell these people what you're doing, it does have to impress them. It does have to mean something to them. It means that you take your citizenship and the obligations thereof very, very seriously.
Yeah, and
if we get more people doing it, that's gonna raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, it is. And you call up and you tell them right off. You give them your name and you tell them right off. I'm not a constituent. I'm calling the entire house. I live in such and such a state. You know, and if you're all the way across the country, that's gonna impress the crud out of them.
Yeah, it is. And beyond that, I don't like this attitude that, especially in the House of Representatives, Susan, that they have, well, you know, if you're not a constituent from my district, I don't have an obligation, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what?
Yeah, you do.
Their paycheck does not come from the members of that district.
Right.
Their paycheck is federal.
Right, and it comes from me.
Yeah, you're paying Congressman Schmendrick's from the 19th district of Kansas or whatever, you're paying his salary.
Yeah, I'm paying the salary of that dude in Alabama I talked to earlier today, as well as the guy in Oregon I talked to yesterday.
Oh dear, which dude in Alabama? Any idea?
All of them.
No, you just started at the top of the alphabet and rolled, huh?
No, it depends on the time zones. Later in the day, I switched to the East Coast because, I could get more coverage that way.
Sure.
By the way, George Bush shut down his comment line, the phone comment line, early because apparently he got inundated.
Oh, so you can't get a message through to the White House?
Well, I couldn't yesterday. The little recording came on that says the comment line is open from such and such to such and such, and it was they had closed it down long before it was supposed to be closed.
Well, they really didn't want to hear from you anyways.
No, they don't. But I figured, well, they're going to hear from me eventually, one way or another. But, you know, I would like to urge other people. This isn't going to cost them a dime. If you are a homemaker or if you are on Christmas vacation or whatever, download it, install it on your computer. It's free of charge until the 31st. Have at it.
Yeah, and what happened? And by the way, what happens to Skype after the 31st? That's when eBay starts trying to make money out of it, right?
Then they start charging you. But it's not. I'm serious when considering going, paying for it, because the yearly fee doesn't seem to be that much for unlimited calling.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think you've got something. You've got a great idea on your hands, and I hope more people will get behind you. As you set on the blog. I don't know. Have you made it possible for folks to report who they've called and what they're calling and what they're talking about?
No, not really, unless they want to put it in the comments.
Yeah, I hope people will do that. This is citizen activism on a par with the real Minutemen, not the bigots on the southwestern border. The real Minutemen who were ready to defend their country at a moment's notice. This is that kind of spirit. This is that kind of mindset, and it's the kind of thing that we're going to have if we're going to put a spine into the Democratic Congress. You know, the business that Andrew was talking about earlier in the program with Senator Reid. the idea of even remotely saying, oh, I could maybe go along with sending a few more thousand people into the meat grinder.
Oh,
no.
I jumped all over it, too. He got the message. I came right out and told him, you pay attention to what the voters have said in regard to the war in Iraq, or you're going to be out of a job.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. You know, do the job, or we'll find somebody who wants it, who wants to do it.
Yeah.
You know, as compared to laying brick or welding or working in a hospital, senators and members of the House really don't have that tough a job.
No.
It's not too much to ask them to, by God, do it.
Now, what I can do is I can edit the posting on the blog to include links to a web page I found that has email addresses for some of the congressmen, for some of the actual, the entire delegations, including governors. But the thing is, you will have to reference it with another page because it's not completely up to date.
Okay.
But I can put the link to that page up, too.
Well, wonderful. I hope you will. Susan, again, thank you so much for everything you do, and I hope people will take your example and run with it.
Yeah, I just hope people, you know, if we can get something like this going, you know, it's liable to get Congress to sit up and take notice.
Yeah, because I can see Congressman Beauregard from Alabama, a good Republican that he is, the little secretary, saying, you got a call from Oregon today.
Yeah.
I got a who from where?
Yeah. And if he starts getting calls from Alaska or Germany or, you know, from wherever, and all of a sudden he's getting calls from way, way outside of his constituency, what's going on?
Yeah, then it'll seem like there's a movement or something going on.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to get across. Instead of one well up toward elderly, chubby little lady in Oregon, there's going to be a whole bunch of ladies.
That's a vision that is scary to any politician. Angry little old ladies.
Well, I'm not little and I'm not old, but I'm sure mad. No.
Exactly. Susan, you take care.
You too. Give everybody a hug for me.
Will do. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we go to the news. Jump right in. It's prayer meeting. This is congregational.
A merry little Christmas.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Let your heart be light.
I'm Bob Kincaid.
From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
From now on, our troubles will be miles away. Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
This is the Quality News Network. Defense Secretary Robert Gates found American commanders cautious regarding a proposal to rush more U.S. troops to Iraq as he visited the war-ravaged country today. 2 days after being sworn in as U.S. Defense Secretary, Gates is taking an on-the-ground tour of the war zone, discussing strategy with top U.S. and Iraqi commanders. In his traditional end-of-the-year news conference today, President Bush said he still believes we will win the war in Iraq, although he backed off statements he made earlier, suggesting sending thousands of additional troops there, a move the Pentagon opposes. The president says he wants to increase the size of the Army and Marine Corps overall. The Pentagon wants the U.S. or the White House to seek an additional $99.7 billion to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, according to the Associated Press. The latest CNN poll finds only 28% of Americans support President Bush's handling of the Iraq War. A record number of Americans, 70%, disapprove of how the president has handled the war. At the UN, Secretary General Kofi Annan warned against military intervention in Iran. Annan says nations should use diplomacy to convince Tehran to discontinue its uranium enrichment. He says using military might would be, quote, unwise and disastrous, end quote. Also at the UN, the Security Council has approved protocols for individuals and groups to appeal being placed on a list accusing them of having ties to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Currently, there is no procedure to correct mistakes or remove names from the sanctions list. China will make it harder for foreign couples to adopt Chinese children. The tighter rules will prohibit people who are single, obese, or over the age of 50 from adopting. There has been a large increase in the number of foreigners who have applied to adopt Chinese babies. The search for two climbers missing since December 10th on Mount Hood has turned from a rescue to a recovery effort. Snow is falling again on the mountain, which prevents any near-term searches from continuing. Most of Colorado has been hit by a major snowstorm, along with parts of Nebraska and Kansas. Denver International Airport is closed at this hour, along with some highways. The National Weather Service says the area could see as much as 3 feet of snow. In Maryland, an appeals court has halted execution by lethal injection until a review panel examines a manual setting out protocols. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Consolidation of federal lawsuits filed by rice farmers in three states makes the legal challenge one of the largest of its kind in the U.S. The farmers, hundreds of them, say their profits were hurt when non-approved genetically altered rice escaped from a experimental plot owned by Bayer Crop Science. A Massachusetts lawmaker has introduced a bill banning artificial trans fats from restaurant menus statewide. The legislation is similar to one now in effect in New York City. That municipal law forces all restaurants, including fast food chains, to stop frying foods in trans fats or face fines. The FDA today approved a new Johnson & Johnson drug used to treat schizophrenia. Called Invega, the drug is effective against the crippling mental disorder that affects 2 million Americans annually. Today, President Bush says he supports an increase in the minimum wage backed by Democrats. However, he favors it if it is linked with tax and regulatory relief for small businesses. Also today, the president signed a $40 billion bill that extends individual and business tax breaks. The bill also normalizes U.S.-Vietnam trade relations. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.72 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 7 points at 12,463, the Nasdaq was down 2 points at 2427, and the S&P 500 was down 2 points at 1423. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Christine Kendall.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine minutes after the hour, prayer meeting edition, pre-Christmas prayer meeting edition. I'm Bob Kincaid. And just as a program reminder, there may be a little bit of a mix-up on the blog over at headonradionetwork.com. We will be live on Friday, and that will be the Christmas program. Agnes and I were talking last night. Last year, we had our Munchkins read portions of the Christmas story. I think we'll do the same thing this year, because it will over time. We can check it out in the archives. The last show prior to Christmas. We can always you'll be able to see them, hear them. It's radio. You'll be able to hear them as they grow up. Traditions, tradition and ritual are important, and they have their place. I mean, I don't care much for the overall dogma, but you know, there's no more impressive Christmas ceremony than a Latin midnight mass in the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, because you know they invented it, literally almost from the ground up. So you know, you get the incense censers and the singing and the chanting and the bow, sit, stand, kneel, bow, sit, stand, kneel, bow. It's just impressive. So, you know, that matters. Right? Gloria in excelsis Deo and all that fun stuff. Let's go to the phones. Sarge is calling from southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
How you doing today?
I'm getting along, Sarge. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I was just reading a message of one of my buddies over in Alabama. It's Merry Christmas, you damn liberal pricks. Oh.
Yeah, nice.
This is
a buddy.
Strange enough, he really is. I don't know what's gotten into him with this stuff. I guess he's been listening too much at Fox News or something. I don't know.
Well, it will rot your brain.
I'm disappointed. I've been trying to talk to him for 3 days, and last time I talked to him, he said...
Well, he's apparently been too busy telling people how to say Merry Christmas.
I guess so, because last time I talked to him, he asked me, he said, what would you do if you was walking along and you saw someone had a nativity scene in the front yard? And I said, well, I'd look at it, and I'd say, well, they did a good job, or, well, they could have done better, and walk on. He said, you mean you wouldn't want them to take it down? And I said, why? It's on their property. You know, they're entitled to believe what they want to.
Sure.
And... I don't think he ever believed me. I think he thought I would sit there and say, take that down. I don't get it.
Well, but you got to understand, these poor people have been told that's you know, that's what we're about. We're Democrats, and we want to and we're progressives and liberals, and we want to tell you the politically correct way to have a holiday. You know, that's just a load up.
I know it.
Stuff.
And, you know, it's funny when I used to believe in all that junk, I always read the part where if you saw someone that didn't believe, then it was your responsibility to put your best foot forward and to try and give them something that they wanted instead of trying to thrust it down their throat. You were supposed to show something in yourself that they would want, and you wouldn't have to say anything. But I guess if I read a different Bible, I don't know.
I understand.
I did call Harry Reid's office about 3:30 Central Time this afternoon.
Did you?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you, I can see a lot of movement in his position, and his phones were busy then, and I had to be on hold for someone to get with me. And if everybody would just keep on calling him and letting him know that this extra troops is just not going to make it, I believe he'll back away completely from it.
Well, you know, he had no sooner said that he might be able to go along with the Bush administration on the extra troops than he'd no sooner said that than Ted Kennedy and Hillary both came out and said, no, what do you thought? No. And that, you know, when his own party jumps out and makes it clear that they're not going to support his position on it, then I think it's a little bit of a learning curve for him because, you know, Harry Reid was minority leader before, and he's not even majority leader yet. And he may still have that minority leader mindset where he's got to compromise and he's got to go along and he's got to get along and he's got to be a team player with the Republicans. You know, bug spray, that day, those days are gone. You know, he's going to have, and, you know, Harry Reid, if you read his biography, did not come up easy, Sarge. Mm-hmm. His dad was a miner and a drunk and violent, died young. They grew up in abject poverty, no running water, you know, real log cabin stuff.
Right.
And so somewhere back in there, I think Harry Reid may have the spirit of a guy who knows how to deliver a nice solid cross right to the face.
I believe he would.
But that's the thing. He's been in the Senate so long, and you know the Senate is so deliberative. You know, deliberative means slow.
Right.
And they're so civil. Oh, the esteemed senator who's crazier than a run over dog. they're that way, and we've got it's our job to make these guys understand that it's okay, because it's, God knows it's been done to them. It's okay for them to stand up, ball up their fist, haul, for Harry to haul his fist, reach all the way back to Elko, Nevada, and bring it on like a freight train, and put it squarely in the face of that pig Mitch McConnell and people like George Bush.
Well, you know, talking with his office, I was really left with the impression that the calls were really welcome. Because he did tell me that he said, well, the senator is, you know, is still trying to decide, but he said that they'd have to come up with something to explain why it would work. They would have to prove to him that it would work. And I said, well, you know, that's the question I have is, what would it be? Because there is absolutely nothing that putting that many more troops in is going to do any good. I mean, I'm from the Vietnam era, you know, and I served in two branches of the military, and I can tell you right now.
The word escalation means something to you, doesn't it, Sarge?
Very much. I mean, I remember escalation, and it wasn't fun. But I don't see it. I mean, you can't. If we were going to put enough troops on the ground to control Baghdad, we would have to put in 12 million because we're going to have two to every Iraqi.
Well, that's about where it is. In fact, that was the next question I was going to ask you, Sarge. If the population of Baghdad is roughly 6 million people, and you take however many people, soldiers, we have there now, and you add to that number as many as 35,000, what's the net effect? Isn't it something approaching zero change?
Yeah, it's not going to change anything. The only thing it's going to do is just bring home more bodies. And we don't need to increase the body flow. We need to decrease the body flow to zero. I mean, look, if you keep sending the same people over and over and over and over into the war zone, so-called war zone, occupation zone, whatever you want to call it. Every time you go into battle, every time you face hostile fire, your chances become that much better that you're going to get killed or wounded.
Yeah, it's the law of averages.
Right, and it's so dumb. I mean, the more you put in, more casualties you're going to have. And why? They tried extra troops. They tried that, what was it, that deal where they put more power in.
Yeah, just last summer, right? I mean, just the last couple of months.
And it didn't work.
No, and, well, I was listening to some talking head discussing that, some so-called expert. You know why it didn't work, he claimed? He said it was because we packed up and went back to base every night. So every morning you're starting the same process over and over again, but every evening you turn the streets back over to the bad guys.
Yeah, it's
But Lord God, can you imagine what our we wouldn't be at 3,000, we'd be 3,500 dead if we had stayed the nights.
Yeah, it's like Vietnam, you know. By day it was the Americans, by night it was the enemy, you know.
Yeah.
Charlie had it at night, and that's pretty much what you're doing there. You're recapturing the hill every dang day, and that's not how you do. You know, that's dumb.
Well, there's not a lot of sense in capturing ground that you can't hold.
Right. I mean, I think Cindy Sheehan's right. They need to send George a Risk game or something.
Yeah, I've been arguing that I wanted to play Risk with George Bush for a couple of years now.
Well, you know, I play Risk online. I don't play the play against other people like they do. They have it set up to where you can't, but I don't bother with the network one. But I play Risk all the time, and I guarantee you, if you use the strategy that they have been using in Iraq, you won't ever win.
No.
There's no way. You can't win.
I didn't know there was a networkable Risk game. This is bad news for me because I love Risk.
I've got it, and it's a good one. I mean, this guy has stuff like USA, Mediterranean, Atlantis.
Wow.
It's got a lot of good ones, and it is set up where you can play it at network, but... By the time I got to where I was good enough with it to play it online, I lost my password that gets me online. I got to write the guy and get it back. But
the truth of the matter is, there are fundamental principles of strategy and tactics involved in that silly little game that haven't even been contemplated by these high-paid guys with all the jewelry on their shoulder boards. Did you catch the announcement today that, who is it, John Abizade? He's retiring in January.
Yeah,
he's made all his money. He has kissed George W. Bush's little bottom until he knows that his retirement is secure, so he can now retire. And with him retiring in about January, I would expect that long about February, he's going to be another one of those generals that comes out and says, "Well, you know, I really didn't like what we were doing, but you know, he's the commander in chief, and I can't tell him no."
Well, you know, that's one of the tough things about being in the military, and I've seen it. So I know now. Abizade is like what my friend Hack always called David Hackworth.
Mm-hmm.
He always called him Perfume Princess.
How true.
And you know, Abizade is a perfume prince. So is this Marine. What's his name? Nutbrain.
Peter Pace.
Peter Pace. Yeah.
Peter Piper.
Peter Pan Pace. But. You know, they are perfume princes. All they're doing is they just kissing up, and they don't care about the troops. But I've got a feeling that Abizade and some of them are starting to look around and say, you know what? I can't deal with this anymore. I can be a team player only so far, and I've already been pushed past my limit. It's time to quit. Because that's what happened a lot of Vietnam, because they knew no matter what they did, they wasn't going to change anybody's mind. And they got tired of the trash, and they moved on. And I think that's a lot of what's happening, because when you buck the system in the military, you turn up doing like what David Hackworth did. They're gonna try and court-martial you. They're going to make you so miserable that you'll have to leave your own country and live outside your country. Hack had lost his rank. He was a full colonel, and they knocked him down to lieutenant colonel, and they kept messing with him to the point where he had to leave. And I think he went to France and lived for about 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because he got so much crap from the military that he couldn't even live in the United States. He had to leave it, and that's what they do. They just see when you refuse an order, then they really, it's just like you start out guilty, and they start punishing you right then. and they punish you until you're cleared, if you get cleared.
Right.
And that's, and it, and believe me, it is one scary proposition to turn around and refuse an order, because I was there one time. They gave me an M16 over in Germany, and we had Bader-Meinhof activity going on, a terrorist group. And my, I knew my weapon didn't work, and I'd been using a backup. And the armor handed me my backup, and this captain, who was super dumb, Mercer, I can even remember his name, Captain Mercer. He was the ranking captain in the Air Force. And the reason he was the ranking captain was because he couldn't make major. And he was standing in there, and he said, why is he getting another weapon? And the armor said, well, his isn't fixed yet, and we're still working on it. He said, no, give him his weapon. And the armor said, no, his M16 doesn't work.
Because that was the big thing about M16s. They frequently didn't work.
Yeah, and to this day, I don't know what was wrong with mine, because I'd gone to the firing range and it quit. It just quit working. It just wouldn't do anything. And even the armor looked at, when he broke it down, he said, I have no idea why it's not firing, but it's not. It was crazy, you know. And Mercer said, you got to take that M16. Well, I had to think about it, because I knew there had been Bader-Meinhof in the area, and they had put out a statement that they were intending to blow up a C-5. And we had been putting ranking guys on C-5. And I was a sergeant, so I got stuck with it that day. And sure enough, here comes the Bader-Meinhof, and I'm standing there with an M16 that I know will not fire. I drew it because I knew if I didn't, that captain and I were going to go around and around, and I was going to get an order from him to take it, and then I was going to have to refuse it, and when I did, they were going to pick me up, and they were going to put me in detention, and then I would be treated like I had some kind of bad disease. So I took the M16, but I told him, when I get out there, if the Bader-Meinhof comes, I'm just going to walk off, and they're going to blow up a C-5. But what I turned up doing was getting on the radio. I called them, said, you better get me an M16 out here that works, because if you don't, I'm leaving. And, boy, as soon as I did that, there was a patrol came and handed me an M16 in a heartbeat. And, of course, we chased off the Bader-Meinhof.
Yeah.
But even though I knew I had a solid case, I knew if I got court-martialed, I could beat it.
But you were going to get, but it was the barbecue and you'd taken the process.
Right, and I turned up losing a stripe, and I never would get my stripe back. And, I mean, those stripes, man, you know, it's like one of my flight chiefs said. He said, you don't mess with my family, and you don't mess with my money. And he said, and these stripes are my money. So if you mess with these stripes, you messing with my money. And that's true. That's where I got paid, was off of those stripes on my shoulder.
Yeah, sure.
And I would have been reduced in rank. I would have lost my my stripe. And, you know, it would have hurt living in Germany, because it was hard enough to live back then on the economy, the German economy. So,
sure.
I mean, so yeah, there's a lot that goes into thinking about speaking up. And you better, if you're going to speak up, it takes a lot of guts. It takes a hell of a lot of guts. And there's not many people that have that kind of guts.
No, and we certainly don't encourage it either.
No.
The very heart and soul of conformity is our military. And I understand the necessity for some of that, Sergeant.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's overdone for sure. But when you're going to tell someone to go in to battle, and they're going to be catching bullets, most likely, you don't want them thinking too much. Only to a certain degree. After that, you don't want them thinking. Because if they think too much, they're going to turn around and get out of there.
Because nobody, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how smart do you have to be to say, they're firing those bullets at me, and there's enough of them that one of them's bound to catch me. Oh, good, I'm going to go in and get some more.
Yeah.
Nah, don't work that way.
Yeah, it's the recruiter's dilemma, isn't it?
Well, listen, everyone, go ahead and call Reed's office. Let's keep on giving these people phone calls. From now on, anything that comes up, we need to get on these phones. We need to tell people, you know?
If we want anything done, Sarge, we've got to let them know that we have their back.
Well, what I did tell Reed's office today, I said, look, we voted because we're sick of this. And if Reed thinks he's going to turn around and send more troops in there for more death and more destruction and no results, I'm going to tell you what, you're not listening to the people. And when I said that, boy, the guy got quiet.
Good, good.
And I think that's what we got to do. We just got to let them know, hey, the BS isn't going anymore. That's all over with.
Yeah, we want this new congressional majority to be a sort of an intervention for what's been going on for at least the last 6 years. We've got to be a reality-based community, and we've got to help. You know, these guys live in Washington. They don't breathe the same air that we do, and it's a different place, and I think we all acknowledge that. We've got to help them understand that the sweet nothings that get whispered in their ears by the lobbyists there are not the reality on the ground, you know, for you in southern Mississippi or me here in West Virginia or anywhere else in this country.
Well, I guess I got kind of an advantage because being down here, being this close to the Katrina devastation, you know, I got hit by it, but I didn't get devastated by it. But being close to the devastation, I've seen how evil this group is. You know, I mean, I've seen the people suffering, and I've seen the horrors that's going on. And so, you know, I guess I might be a little more aware of it. But when I look at my dad's picture, and when I feel my different injuries flaring up due to the weather or just happens to flare up, thoughts come to my mind. Like, my dad had two Purple Hearts from World War II. Twice he got shot down in planes. And it drove him. He had PTSD, and he always had trouble the rest of his life. And I have nights when I wake up screaming, just going through nightmares, and mostly since this Iraq thing started. And I think about all of that, and then I think about all my friends that didn't come back, and I think about people like Gunny Bob, and I think of those guys that won't ever be the same again because of Iraq. And you know what? I don't really much care if those people in Washington get mad at me or not.
No.
I really don't care because I think my family, my friends, and my fellow countrymen have suffered enough. And if they don't like it, tough.
I agree. Sarge, thank you so very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. And let's see. First-time caller, Don, calling from Oregon. Hey, Don, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Well, you got another one of those Columbia City people on the line.
All right. Welcome.
I'm 83 years old. I've fought in two wars.
Okay.
And I agree with this gentleman that was just on the phone.
And in what regard?
In regards that you open your mouth when you're spoken to, when you're in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in there in Korea when the Chinese entered the war. And let me tell you, it is something else. You do what you're told, and you try to keep your stripes, but it's a little hard at times. I lost mine a few times the first time I was in, but I finally wised up and kept my mouth shut the second time.
And so, but part of that wising up, it's got to be a chore to keep your mouth shut sometimes when you know that you're right and they're wrong.
Well, that's right. It's so hard. But you learn to keep your mouth shut after your second hit in there, finally. But I'll tell you, I agree. This fact that this has gone on far too long, and we've got a guy in there that thinks he owns the world, and he doesn't own anything. We're the ones who put him in there. Well, not us.
No.
The court was.
Right. Yeah.
But anyhow, we've got the people in there now that if they don't wise up, they won't have a job next time because I'll be out here campaigning against them.
Good. You know, I honor that kind of spirit because it's something that has been in far too short supply in the last few years. There's been a lot of roll over and take it, and I think we're finally coming to a point where we're not willing to do that anymore. At least I hope that's the case.
Well, I hope so too, because I'm just fed up with the way everything is, and we voted against these Republicans in there. I voted against them every time, but I just feel that we spent too many years trying to get this country on its feet.
Well, there was.
Why do we let one guy get in here and just ruin the whole thing?
Well, there was a long fight against fascism that you were a part of.
That's right.
That fight was not engaged to turn around 50 years later and let the same thing take root in this country.
Well, that's the way I feel about it, and I've always felt that way about it, and. I told Sue one time, I said, by golly, you know, I think I'll just run for office. And she says, if you do, she says, I'll divorce you.
Yeah. Well, and that's another one of those moments where you just have to learn to keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, it? That's right. But anyhow, you and your wife have a nice Christmas. Tell the children hello for us.
All right, I certainly will. Thank you so much. So good to finally get to talk to you.
Yeah, you bet, Bob.
You take care and Merry Christmas.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Don is Susan's husband. What a wonderful couple of people. Let's see. Spike joins us from Easton, PA. Hey, Spike, welcome to the program.
Well, gonzo greetings from someone not on the wonderful people list.
Oh, you're not on the wonderful people list?
Oh no. not the way I treat people, especially elected officials.
Well, you know, maybe it depends on what they're doing and whether or not they generally earn their treatment.
Yeah, well, it's a shame. It's a shame. I guess I have to be the bad guy, but, you know, at least I enjoy being the bad guy.
Well, somebody's got to call these people to account, for heaven's sakes.
Oh, of course, and it goes at every level, you know. This country doesn't just suffer from bad leadership at top, it, you know. Unlike the Reagan economy, it does trickle down bad government. It trickles all the way down to local government. Unfortunately, because a lot of these local stooges idolize the idiots up above, and they have about the same worthless mentality on how to govern, at no matter what level they're at.
Well, there's truth in that. And then, you know, that speaks to the things that we discuss on this program, Spike, and that is, if you've got an urge to be in politics or to represent the people, you don't have to run right out and run for president.
No.
You can run for city council, you can run for county commission, board of elections, alderman, whatever.
Well, say what you want about Jesse Ventura. He was a mayor of a city for one full term before he became governor.
Right.
He actually earned his way up. He didn't just run on star status. Which that's what always gets me. People lump him in with Ventura and while he may be very libertarian, he's a man who has served his nation more than once and has served his community many times.
That's true.
You know, it wasn't just about his ego. While he has a large...
No, I didn't... I admired his bent for public service. It was some of the more... You know, there's a hateful side to libertarianism, Spike.
Well, yeah, it's more pro-business.
It's the side of libertarianism that says I'm going to tell the world to go screw itself until I need something out of it, and then it's going to be all about me.
Yeah, pretty much. Although the libertarians have infiltrated the Republican Party quite well. Yeah, and you brought that point up very well earlier when you mentioned, you know, the Republicans are all about spending less money, but you know how quickly they say, oh, well, it's my right to use up gas, it's my right to use up electricity.
Yeah, it's their right to blow West Virginia to a flattened pulp.
Yeah, and that's the libertarian point of view.
And because libertarians have no sense of a shared responsibility as a nation per se, they tend to want everything, all the good things that this republic can offer, without having to make any sort of sacrifice or make any sort of down payment on the process and on the privilege.
Yeah, but that's pretty accurate, and unfortunately, not only have they taken over one party, they, you know, it's arguable that with people like Ed Rendell and Bill Clinton, they kind of took over the Democratic Party as well.
To a certain extent. I mean, now, I've got, when it comes to drug policy, when it comes to issues of personal, what I call, or what is generally referred to as personal morality, I'm as libertarian as they come.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, it has no bearing and no impact on anybody else in the world. What I do peacefully in my own home and without, subjecting other people to.
Yeah.
So I can understand that. But when you extend the idea of libertarianism to say things like, and Social Security has to be ended.
Yeah.
I wonder how many libertarians out there are drawing Social Security.
Oh. You know how many of them live off of that amongst other things?
Oh, yeah, sure, exactly.
One of the most obnoxious people I ever met was a diehard libertarian from, by the way, Orange County, California, of all places, of course.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, there's a discussion going on in the chat room right now. Neil Bortz's name was brought up.
Oh, well.
And, you know, he's, I'm a libertarian, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's just cover. It's a cover for... him not for the Republican Party not being hateful enough to suit him.
Yeah, well, not only does he like to claim he's libertarian, my also two other favorites is Bill O'Reilly and Jerry Doyle claiming they're independent.
Oh, well, yeah.
By the way, Jerry Doyle, a reference half your audience might not even get because he's so low rated.
But I know who Jerry Doyle is.
Yeah. And any sci-fi geek probably also happens to know who he is.
And he was an Emmy nominated, blah, 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 on Babylon 5. Dr. Bill O'Brien, who's on this network, he and I were both on the same radio station in Beckley at one point, and when Dr. Bill would have to be out, they would run Jerry Doyle in his place. And, you know, I'd be cruising down the road going into work, and I'd hear Jerry Doyle and that stupid ego, 10 years as a Wall Street insider trader, and, you know, it just makes you want to bang your head on the steering wheel.
Yeah. One day, what was another good one he did one day? He was belittling a caller, asking if he's ever stared down the gun like he did in Brooklyn one time.
Not staring down the barrel of a gun in a uniform or anything like. And he's an honorary astronaut. That's another one you get off Jerry Doyle.
Yeah.
He's a junior flyboy, Roger Ramjet.
Yeah, I actually got on his show once, but I had to go under a cover in disguise to get on because obviously. They only let weak liberals on shows like that, so I made believe I was a Pat Buchanan supporter. Since I get the magazine, I know enough talking points out of this. So I said I was Joe from Philadelphia. I called up claiming I was and by the way, I just nailed him on the talking points that magazine was nailing the president on and stuff, and he lost the debate, you know. I was making believe I was a Buchanan supporter, and I beat him. Imagine if I actually was.
Yeah, see, that's scary when you can actually crawl into the skin of one of these freaks.
During the presidential election, I believe the number was 15 magazines I had a subscription to that year, and they ranged from the International Socialist Review to the Weekly Standard, the American Conservative, the only one I actually read when it's not an election year, I guess, of the conservative publications. The Weekly Standard, as soon as I hit 2005, that magazine went away.
Oh, you're a better man than I am, Spike. I tell you, I've tried a couple of times.
And I buy other stuff randomly at newsstand. I read all left and right. Trust me, I truly am the ultimate political junkie, and I have a huge interest in political right and politics. I mean, what the hell? I've read, I think, 3 Chris Matthews books, you know?
Dude. Oh.
And I usually did them kind of funny because I'd read like a Michael Moore, then I'd read a Chris Matthews, then I read like another Michael Moore. Like I kind of, that's usually how I read too. I mix it up where I just go different angles real fast so I don't get myself in too much of a rut. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to do that like I once did.
Well, you know, you mentioned reading and trying to, you know, bounce around the spectrum. I got a story in the stack here somewhere. The latest thing in science fiction is to posit the American disaster. Right-wing science fiction authors. I don't know if you're a science fiction junkie or not, too, but there's a novel out there right now, Spike, you're going to love this, about President Chelsea Clinton and Vice President Michael Moore. And what happens on the day of the state visit of Osama bin Laden?
Oh, my Lord, this is almost as good as the crazy far-right religious comic pamphlets that I've seen over the years a couple times.
This is straight out of Chick publication. Where will you be when the rapture comes?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
as you're older,
I don't know.
I would think Osama would be like real, real dead by the time Chelsea get. You know, there's. You know, I've been amazed and some of it's kind of fun to watch. You know, the whole right wing we hate Hillary machine. But I thought, you know, okay, so that's as far as it goes. But no, this is, you know, it's a story out of the Los Angeles Times. The name of the book is Prayers for the Assassin.
Well, you know, the whole thing, though, come to think of it, not only would Bin Laden be old, man, Michael Moore would be probably drooling, not able to keep his mouth shut. That's how ludicrous of a proposed idea this one is. And at least pick Madonna's adopted African kid, you know, if you're gonna, you know, or I don't know, maybe Oprah will have found a way to clone herself. You know, we've come up with something a little more clever with a crazy far-right talking.
You know, this is out of the Los Angeles Times. 2 years from now, terrorists under the banner of the Progressive Restoration will take over Manhattan in a larger attempt to overthrow the government. 13 years later, President Chelsea Clinton and Vice President Michael Moore will haul out the good White House china for Osama bin Laden's state visit. This is the fun part, though. By fiddling with your radio, you may be able to catch an underground broadcast by Sean Hannity.
Oh, well.
If you own a radio, that is.
You know, that. Oh, by the way, that a similar tactic, I remember the CBN, the 700 Club, Osama bin Robertson's group.
Yeah.
They did back when Clinton was president, proclaiming their vision of the future of guys dressed like going in for Elon. And busting kids reading the Bible and then shooting one.
God.
Because you know, he was reading the Bible.
He's being persecuted.
No. I can't believe there's still people in this country who think that Sean Hannity, you know, I've listened to many.
A voice for freedom and democracy.
Yeah. I've listened to a lot of right-wing shows. It's harder to listen to right-wing radio than to read right-wing writing because the right-wing radio is just so stupid.
Well, is Sean still opening his show with that song about the woman that shoots her husband on the 4th of July for beating the snot out of her?
I don't know. All I know is he plays way too much country, first of all, for a kid from Long Island, New York.
Long Island, you got to say the G. Long Island.
Yeah, my parents are from there, but I don't have the accent that my mother could clearly do for you. It seems like Long Island, New York, gives us the craziest of right wing radio. Best of all, we have Sean Hannity, we have Bill O'Reilly. If you go to Brooklyn, we have Michael Weiner, which is Brooklyn is in reality on Long Island. It's just part of New York City.
Yeah.
I don't know what goes on out there other than, everyone...
Something hears, in the water.
Yeah, everyone hears when Billy Joel crashes the car out in the Hamptons. but best of all, he's from my parents' hometown. But, I don't know. They're such a compliant stupidity. And you know what? We see that not only with their audience and their radio and some of their writings, but... It's certainly in their governance too, and we're certainly seeing that with a Republican mayor here in Easton, who his way of handling things is he just hires people to come up with ideas and decisions. He hasn't made a decision yet. He gets quote consultants who get money.
Yours, that would be your money.
Yeah, and
lots of it.
The city just continues to run a bigger debt, all this other stuff, and now their greatest idea is. And keep in mind, we have an all-Democratic council. They're raising the parking meter fees in the city, and it's amazing.
Yeah, because by all means, you want to drive people away from downtown and out to the mall, right?
Yeah, 75 cents in the downtown, the business area, and by the courthouse, $1 an hour. And, you know, there's only, it's a small city. I mean, now we're closing in on Philadelphia and New York parking rates to park in a city that's 4 square miles with 26,000 residents, and this is the best they can do. And worst of all, you know, this is the best of Democrats.
Where's all the money? I mean, apart from the consultants, where's all the money going?
Well, all of our elected officials are paid. I mean, there's some people getting paid big money in our city. Our mayor, who comes from wealth, his family owns a jewelry store, he gets paid, and he has yet to voluntarily donate his salary back into the city budget. Some of our council, I believe two or three of our council members out of the five are business owners and don't really need the money, you know, and no one wants to, you know, cough up their salary, which at a local level, them donating their salary would mean something. At a national level, it really means nothing because of the debt that exists.
Right.
But, you know, and none of them want to do that. They get the council. If I get elected to council, I'll get $9,000 a year plus health benefits from the city.
You get the health bennies?
Yeah, and best of all, not only do you get the health benefits, if you get a second term, you get a pension out of the deal.
Nice!
Yeah.
When are you filing?
Well, there's an election next year. I want to run as an independent. You kidding me? $9,000 a year? I'll work at making coffee for a living and working on council.
Sure.
At least I could use
well, maybe,
money.
Yeah, maybe the people who actually work for a living would have a voice on the council for a change.
Well, yeah. We do have one guy who he doesn't own a business. He's pretty close. Unfortunately, it was his side of council that had to go along with this to pass the budget. But for the most part, he's more on the people's side. But, you know, yeah. And the ridiculous idea is if they didn't have a budget to pass to go into the new year, our city would literally by law have to shut down so they balance the budget. And that's a scary thought, because what if a Katrina hit eastern Pennsylvania in September and the city went into such a severe debt that by the end of the year we couldn't be balanced? Would that mean that our city would cease to work for
But everything you're talking about, Spike, is being played out in city after city after city after city in this country.
Yeah.
Because this whole idea that government is not your friend. We don't get government off your back and give you back your money. Well, you know, that money was being given back, and it was being given back in the form of services. And oh God, you know, I don't even want to go off on it. But the fact of the matter is, you're not exclusively having your parking meter rates raised because your mayor is a jerk. You're having your parking meter rates raised because the money that used to come from the federal government that people like me and every other American all over this country paid got parsed out a little bit here, a little bit there, and it all rolled downhill, and it winds up in Easton, PA, and it winds up in Florence, South Carolina, and it winds up in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and on and on and on, and it keeps local governments from having to turn around and squeeze its people a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, your mayor's a jerk.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he rarely goes to council meetings. I mean, since he...
Oh, that's nice. Oh, wait, he's drawing his breath and his pay and not doing anything else. He don't go to the meetings.
Yeah, you know, because technically he's not required, but he rarely ever attends, which... Oh, only goes to further prove that he really just doesn't do anything other than collect our tax dollars and then hand it out to other people who are willing to collect our tax dollars.
Does he have a throne?
Well, I mean, he does.
A little crown, scepter. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's not a special one though. Although I forget the official title they give him, but it's essentially his vice mayor. It's this guy who's a lot like Dick Cheney, a unsociable guy, not a nice guy at all. Doesn't live in this city at all, but he comes here to collect our money and basically to look for ways to make money off of us in our city.
And hire consultants.
And hire consultants, yeah, and get his friends some money from us, too.
Yeah, some of this is straight out, this is Dilbert stuff, you know? Oh, what we need is a consultant. You know, dang.
Yeah, it's one thing if you pay a lawyer to look over something before you make it law to make sure it's legal.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's generally handy to have a lawyer around for writing laws.
Yeah, and we do have essentially three of those. But these consultants, they're coming up with ways to rejuvenate our economy and our businesses and the downtown.
And they come up with the same crappy old ideas time after time after time. You know, they're that wonderful book that's out there, The Great American Job Scam by Greg LeRoy, just documents this stuff. And the consultants come in and they're getting a cut. They're getting a cut from part of it, usually involved in money coming from the developer who wants to develop whatever it is. And you come in and you, well, you know, what you need to do is raise your parking rates, and then you take that money and you give it to Cabela's, or you give it to Bass Pro Shop. And we'll build a big old outlet, and people will come from miles around to shop here, and we'll make a fortune, and you'll get a little bit of your tax money back, and a few people will get $6 an hour jobs. Cool, huh? And we're going to call that economic development.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, one of the most famous businesses in the world is in Eastern Pennsylvania, Crayola Crayons. And guess who always seems to get, and their production plants are outside of the city. Their tourist attraction is right next to City Hall. Guess who always, no matter where in the greater Easton area, whether it's us suburban townships or in the city proper, that gets the most sweetheart deals on taxes?
Oh, Benny and Smith, Crayola. Yeah. Is it still Benny and Smith?
Oh, yeah, it is Benny and Smith. It's called, I mean, because the Crayola brand is what they...
Right.
The production plants say Benny and Smith, yeah. And in reality, their businesses often say that also. But their big downtown attraction here is obviously the, quote, Crayola factory, where they show in a much small-scale version that they charge, you know, people bring their kids and see how they make crayons and then charge them astronomically high prices for the products in the gift store area.
Amazing.
And in best of all, they basically... they always get some sort of a sweet deal out of the city because they're so large and they've been around for so long.
And I'm sure they've never hesitated to play. Well, you know, if you don't do this, we'll have to leave. We're leaving. We're going. We need a tax break. Oh, gosh, we've got our bags half packed. Oh, okay, the tax break came through. Cool, we're staying.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's the funny thing. You know, this parking meter increase, that's going to kill the little people. It'll never kill Crayola. You know, they'll figure out ways around raising the park, but... the downtown businesses that are hoping to nab one or two of these people going there are going to end up being the ones who suffer. The ones who are suffering the most are the mom and pop businesses who are trying to get the local population.
Well, I mean, is there still a downtown business district in Easton?
Yeah, it was ravished for a long time, and when Larry Holmes was champion, it was a ghost town essentially. They had parades for him in front of empty storefronts in the downtown back then when he was the heavyweight champ. Although he did buy some stuff downtown, and even though his politics at times have been questionable at best, he did try to put some money into the downtown and different, you know, the lower parts of the city. But now he's basically, his wife kind of runs his empire, really. So she's about trying to just make a lot of money. So they're not as community oriented as they once were. But yeah, when he was champion, it was a ghost town. But it has come back. A lot of people like to thank and claim Benny and Smith are a big part of it. I think it's just the effort and chutzpah of a lot of local transients, for the most part, have moved to the area and saw potential and have really pushed to make the area better. And we do have some good businesses in the downtown. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of them just survive.
But when you jack up the parking rates and stuff like that, it's a little less light. It's easier to go to the mall.
Exactly. No one's coming from the suburbs into the city, and the city population, people who live in my neighborhood, we don't pay for parking here. And a lot of people who live in my part of town, even though downtown is essentially 0.75 miles away, they're not going to drive there. You know, you got to pay. I'm not going to pay a $10 or $20 ticket because I was trying to spend some money in my own city when I could just go to the suburbs for free.
Right, and see, that's the other side of it. Those little ticket cops in the little Cushman carts that cruise around. See, tinfoil hat, and we're running out of time and stuff. But I believe that parking meters are crooked.
Yeah, I think they're just bad news overall. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it happen in Charleston, West Virginia. You drop in your hour's worth of coins, and you know, you can stand there and watch it, and the thing reads, you know, time expired at, you know, 54 minutes.
Yeah, we had that problem here with some things. Parking, and not to mention enforcement costs money, too, which is the point I brought up. You know, we're going to have to pay people to enforce it longer and for more. And, you know, that means we're creating more work. You know, it's not saving anything. And, my biggest problem is our tax dollars are already paid for the streets. Why are we paying for them again? That's my problem with toll roads too. You know, we, our tax dollars go into that. Why do we have to then pay for it again? Why?
Well, yeah, and you're turnpike poor there in PA too.
Oh, yeah, our turnpike's in bad shape. And and best of all, when they did finally raise the price of it, then they tried to screw the union out of giving a raise after a very long time of being stingy to the employees who were supposed to maintain it. It's like, well, gee, I wonder why the place needs a lot of work. They don't want to pay their employees.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I read the letter to the editor that you sent me. Yeah, keep giving them hell, Spike.
Oh, yeah, I will. I always try to add my little zing in it, and I try to make it not only true, but entertaining, and I seem to have a gift sometimes of getting the biggest applause of the night at City Council, which I don't know if that's a good or bad.
You know, the fact that you show up at City Council is almost miraculous in and of itself. Somebody,
well, very few do, especially my age.
Right. You know, and the thing is, you know, if you it would make the blood run out of their faces.
Yeah.
If you and say, you know, 10 or 15 of your buddies showed up. Oh, it's a riot, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, people my age group have no concern yet to get involved. Not until they have minivans with soccer magnets on the back and kids will they even give it a thought, and even then probably not until they're on the AARP's roll.
Well, unfortunately, there's truth in that. Spike, have yourself a good week.
Hey, no problem. And by the way, I hope in 10 years Freckles considers running for office. That's what I'll say after hearing her talk.
I do, too. We have great hopes for her.
Yeah.
All right. Take it easy, Spike.
You, too.
Later.
Happy Festivus.
Festivus. Very, very Festivus to you.
Yeah.
Bye now. Top of the hour. We'll come back. More of your phone calls at 877-443-2366. Email rolls into Bob at headonradio.com. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Two hearts are thrilling in spite of the chill weather. Love knows no season, love knows no climb. Romance can blossom any old time. Here in the open, we're walking and hoping together. Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight we're having tonight. Walking in the winter wonderland. Run away.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush says he wants to chart a new way forward in Iraq and says he will not seek to boost new U.S. troop levels unless it would help deter rampant sectarian violence. Defense Secretary Robert Gates found American commanders cautious regarding a White House proposal to increase American troops in Iraq. Gates is making his first visit there as new Secretary of Defense. The Pentagon, meantime, wants the White House to seek an additional $99.7 billion to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, according to the Associated Press. U.S. troops turned over control of the southern province of Najaf today to celebrations and parades in the streets. It is uncertain whether control can be held by Iraqi forces indefinitely. The latest CNN poll indicates 28% of Americans support President Bush's handling of the war in Iraq. 70% are against. Also at the UN, the Security Council has approved protocols for individuals and groups to appeal being placed on a list accusing them of having ties to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. Currently, there is no procedure to correct mistakes or remove names from the sanctions list. According to the BBC, Somalia's interim government and rival Islamists have agreed to an immediate ceasefire and to resume peace talks without preconditions. Snow is falling again on Mount Hood, which is preventing the search from continuing for two climbers missing since December 10th. And now a recovery effort instead of a rescue, the search is winding down as authorities lose hope of finding the men alive. The Northeast, meantime, is bracing for yet another major windstorm on the heels of recent storms that killed 14 and knocked out power to millions of homes and businesses. NASA hasn't yet decided where the space shuttle Discovery will land. Bad weather is forecast in Florida. Discovery is set to arrive back on Earth on Friday. Most of Colorado has been hit by a major snowstorm, along with parts of Nebraska and Kansas. Runways are closed at Denver International Airport, and an estimated 800 flights have been canceled so far. The National Weather Service says the area could see as much as 3 feet of snow. In Maryland, an appeals court has stopped execution by lethal injection until a review panel examines a protocol. You're listening to the Quality News Network. A look at science and business news is up next. It's now 2.5 minutes past.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Expensive new blood tests that were supposed to be far more accurate at predicting stroke and heart attack are now being seen as no better than conventional measurements like blood pressure and cholesterol levels. The new tests are not covered by insurance and can cost up to $150. The FDA today approved a new Johnson & Johnson drug used to treat schizophrenia. Invega has been shown to be effective against the crippling mental disorder that affects 2 million Americans annually. Today, President Bush said he supports an increase in the minimum wage backed by Democrats. However, he favors it if it is linked with tax and regulatory relief for small businesses. Also today, the president signed a $40 billion bill that extends individual and business tax breaks. The bill also normalizes U.S.-Vietnamese trade relations. FedEx posted a 9% second quarter profit gain, but it's being overshadowed by the company's third quarter outlook. FedEx officials say higher fuel costs and a sluggish U.S. economy could cast a shadow on upcoming earnings. Euronext shareholders have voted in favor of a $14 billion plan to merge with the New York Stock Exchange. The deal creates the first transatlantic equities market. Light sweet crude traded at $63.54 a barrel at the close of Wall Street today. The Dow down 7 points at 12,463. NASDAQ and S&P 500 both down 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
One of these days, we're going to get even fancier and more high-tech than we are. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we're going to have a setup where Agnes can say things to me in the microphone that only I can hear, as opposed to the other voices that only I can hear. She's sitting there, you know, and not talking, but, you know, I'm supposed to read lips. And I don't understand you.
Oh,
God, 7 minutes after the hour. What fun we've been having tonight. We got a caller on a nameless caller on the line. Hello, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you?
Am I the 10th caller? What did I win?
We've got an I Love George Bush t-shirt for you.
Never mind.
What the... Okay. Let's go to our good friend Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
I see you have a fan.
Apparently.
Well.
Well, you know, how it is with the 10th caller.
Well, you know, sometimes I can be just as contrary and contentious, so, I mean, hell.
I have heard toilets flushing on other radio shows, Jim.
Well, I don't do that. I mean, that's not my thing. I mean, I'll reserve that for Steve O'Brien.
That's what I mean. I've heard the toilet flush on that show.
Have you? Well, sometimes you hear some of the stuff he says, and it just initiates peristalsis.
Exactly. It's the right thing at the time.
Well, just a few things. First, General Abizag will have his hail and farewell in March.
Is it March?
Mm-hmm. Effectively, he'll start transitioning his command, probably. I would say that transition has already begun. And
shortly thereafter comes the book tour.
Well, I guess so. But what I'm trying to, you know, since you started the second half of your program, we have spent $11 million in that hour in Iraq.
Doesn't that make your head spin?
Well, not anymore. It's just almost par for the course now until something better comes along. But
well, Jim, it's better or worse. That's the scary part.
But more, we spent last year just as much on the misadventure in Southwest Asia and Iraq than we have the entire federal budget. And, you know, that simply cannot be sustained.
Well, it has repercussions down the road that I don't think anyone has contemplated.
And going back to states getting money from the federal government, we used to have a program. My dad and I used to discuss this with him because he was mayor of my hometown for about 30 years. And he had to go to, he spent more time in D.C. trying to get federal grants and things like that than he did at home. But we used to have a program called revenue sharing, in which South Carolina back in the 70s would get $9 back for every dollar they paid in taxes. Well, I guess during the Reagan era, revenue sharing sort of dried up. And, of course, that has a roll-down effect on local governments because they no longer have the federal subsidies, and you have all these increased local taxes and increased this, that, and the other, which don't exactly sustain local economies, in my opinion. But yet there are some people who say the Republicans are the ones who want to all be behind local business and having business here and business there. But I really don't think that the climate they're fostering with the misappropriation of federal dollars is affecting that end. And I think it's exactly having the exact opposite, to tell you the truth.
Well, Jim, you know, these people on the other side are, you know, we're constantly just browbeaten with the notion of, you know, family values and traditional American values. At one point, one Republican congressional candidate was running an ad that literally showed a clip from Leave It to Beaver. But that world was running on a different kind of federal government and a different idea about how government how the federal government functions in its relationship with state and local governments. These people want family values, and they talk traditional values, but when it comes to the American Main Street, they couldn't care less.
Well, I would think that in a majority of towns you come across, you will see that Main Street is basically dried up. You don't see the good business there that used to be.
No, it's all out in
the suburbs, with places like Walmart.
Yeah,
and even the businesses, you know, when you increase these local taxes and stuff like that, these businesses that could ameliorate economic conditions in a community, they're going to go outside where, you know, it's cheaper for them to operate. And so basically, you know, you're going to have to, in my opinion, reverse that economic flow and make it cheaper for businesses to, you know, to be in local towns and things like that, and not have main streets that are simply empty shells and buildings that are just deserted. And, you know, I can see that here where I live, and also I've seen it in my own hometown and other places too.
And it's a shame too, because the downtowns are charming places if they're managed and maintained properly, and they're terribly convenient.
Well, yes, they are, and of course they're the heart of the American community, but when you have people that are, because of economic distress, being driven out of the cities, then you have the inner cities, and the only thing that's left are basically things that aren't too attractive, and you have the development of basically what I call a propagation of Ninth Ward type environment.
Yeah. Well, what, you know, what's beautiful about a mall?
Well, I've never found it particularly attractive. A few I have. I mean, there's one in Washington called Georgetown Park Mall, which is absolutely incredible, but that's the exception, not the rule. I'm not talking about strip malls.
Yeah, the rents are incredible. The space is relatively small and nondescript. You know, it can't compare with a rejuvenated downtown area. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing fun about a big box store. And I'm not just gooning on Walmart here, Jim. There's all kind, you know, what Lowe's, Home Depot. It's oppressive going into these things. They're cavernous. Their employees are generally either tolerant of their jobs or outright unhappy. And it seems like it's fair to say that America can do better.
Well, I would hope so. I think America can do a lot better when we are able to take money that we're spending overseas and it's throwing good money after bad, and we spend it on our own infrastructure. Because I have a sneaking suspicion that there are natural calamities and disasters that are, you know, coming. And you don't have to be a meteorologist or a volcanologist or any type of scientist to realize that, you know, there are things that are in the offing that will make Katrina look like an Easter pageant.
I fear that you're correct in your assessment.
Well, I mean, you know, when you hear scientists discuss, for example, the, that caldera in the Canary Islands.
Yeah.
And if that should collapse, that's going to cause a lot of people a lot of pain. And you're going to have a lot of the eastern seaboard of this country underwater. Now, how prepared are we for that? Not very. And, you know, we're talking about rebuilding the World Trade Center. Well, I'm afraid if that should happen, they'd have to put it on pontoons because that part of Manhattan will be completely underwater. And, you know, my point tonight is simply this, that we need to take our money and spend it on our own people and our own country and the development of an infrastructure that can at least be somewhat prepared, if you can be prepared, for some of the types of things that could happen. I mean, for example, if Yellowstone were to go ballistic, and seismologists are not telling us not if, but when, because that's one of the most active volcanoes in the entire Western world, and it could have the most catastrophic events over this entire country.
Well, sure, and other places that are much less contemplated, Jim. The earthquake that created Real Foot Lake in Western Kentucky or Tennessee, I forget which. I think Kentucky was the earthquake of the New Madrid Fault in the early 19th century. And the scientists, you know, predicting any of this stuff is an inexact art at most. But you've now got a population along that fault line that, you know, everybody knows about the San Andreas Fault. Very, very few people think about the New Madrid Fault. But you've got a population along that fault line that is utterly unprepared for any sort of seismic activity in that region. And that activity along the Mississippi River Basin will have impacts as far east as middle Kentucky and possibly as far west as Kansas. You know, it's a real nightmare scenario. St. Louis and Memphis disappear.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have the Great Lakes be joined by a body of water that connects them with the Gulf of Mexico. That's
so,
basically what they're talking about.
And there's very little interest in preparedness for any of this kind of thing. And the other, you know, you talk about spending our money and our treasure where it needs to be spent, you know, here at home. The sad fact of the matter is one of the outgrowths of the Iraq War, for good or ill, is that they have created a deficit spending situation that all but ensures that we will not be able to spend the money where it needs to be spent at home. Because if we stop the war now, how big's the hole, Jim? I mean, you're pretty good with numbers and statistics. How big a hole are we already in because of the Iraq War?
Oh, I would say probably it's almost fathomless.
Yeah. And what? I saw today, I've got the article sitting here somewhere, that the Pentagon wants 99... Now, Dennis Kucinich described last week there's already $70 billion in the pipeline for more war, and now the Pentagon says it wants $99.7 billion more on top of that.
Well, this entire Iraq situation over there and our troops and our military presence there is basically like a thorn in the flesh. And, you know, you don't heal any type of wound that you have by allowing the thorn or the foreign object to remain there. The healing process will only really start when that thorn is completely withdrawn. And that's what needs to occur.
And we're the thorn.
Well, I at one time thought perhaps we could have some type of scheduled gradual withdrawal, but I think that we are past that point now.
There can be, it gives me no pleasure, and I know it gives you no pleasure, Jim, to say something like this, but there can be no healing there as long as we are there.
Well, you know, we're the ones causing the abscess.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a huge abscess, and, you know, the abscess is caused by a foreign object, and the foreign object has been American intervention in that country and the dislocation of the people there and the continuing types of insurgencies, which will continue to grow. They're not going to stop if we put 40,000 men or if we put 400,000 men in there. It's going to continue to grow because we are in just the same type of situation that Maximilian was in Mexico when Napoleon propped him up over there. And, you know, finally, Louis Napoleon III had to say, "Max, I'm sorry, but I'm having to take my troops home.
Can't do it anymore." Well, you know, Jim, you've moved in those circles in Washington, D.C. Help us understand the mindset. Where does anybody get hold of the notion that putting 35,000 more American troops in a city of 6 million has the remotest possibility of making a difference? Where does that kind of thinking come from?
About the same type of mentality the gambler would have around a crap table. Thinking if I throw the dice one more time and put another stack of poker chips in, I might win.
Yeah, I'm already going broke. I might as well go broker.
Well, I mean, some people, it's just like that. That's basically like, I mean, some of these people up there are addicted to some type of gambling fever in which they're gambling with a lot more than just their own personal fortunes, but also the fortunes of this country. And you have to simply walk away and cut your losses. I say we made a mistake and we need to withdraw and we need to take this money that we're spending on all these what if type things into something that's a lot more pertinent investment, invest in our own infrastructure.
Well, I can't wrap
up. It's just throwing good money after bad. And not to mention the cost of lives and things of that nature, because it's just going to be that many more American soldiers to shoot at for these people, and there are more of them than there are of us. And of course, from a logistical standpoint, we have to go halfway around the world, and our supply lines are overstretched, our military is overburdened, and they're not going to be able to solve the problem by exacerbating the load or increasing the weight that's being pressed upon it. I mean, you don't stop something. You know, if you have a hemorrhaging limb, you don't apply pressure to it, do you?
No.
I think you apply a tourniquet and you shut off the flow of blood until you can staunch the wound. And the wound can't be staunched until the abscess is healed or the thorn is removed or whatever foreign object is causing it. That's the way I look at it.
It seems like
oversimplistic.
No, it's not oversimplistic. It's plain. It's not simple. It's plain. It's as plain as a sign in front of your face. And maybe they get lost in the fact that it's simple and it's plain. But it makes perfectly good sense to me, and I cannot conceive of somebody that's sitting out there, whether it's John McCain or George Bush or anybody else, saying what we need is more potential victims.
Well, Bush is probably trying in his own mindset, for lack of a better term, and I'll be respectful and just use that term, to think that if he could do a little bit more, a little bit of this and that and the other, that his position in history may be treated more kindly.
Do you think, Jim, that there may be a little bit of cynicism involved as well, in that he knows he's gotten us into this, he knows that he cannot get out of it and salvage his own reputation, so he'll leave it for the next poor schmuck who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to do it?
Well, it just reminds me of the example of the type of attitude I think that Hitler had during the last days of the war, when he had been confined in his bunker and the Russians were 300 meters away in the tear garden from the Reich Chancellery. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, he is giving these orders that cannot be obeyed, that cannot be effectively implemented, or they can be obeyed. And all he's going to get back is a lot of bad news, like Hitler did at the very end of the war, say, you know, hey, it's hopeless. The situation is beyond repair. And it's almost like it's the same type of Hitlerian mindset that overtook Adolf when everything was falling down around him. And I honestly think, in his own mind somewhere, he doesn't really care. You know, I pursued this course, and I'm just going to pursue it some hell or high water.
And it's,
or it'll be cleft in two, and the two halves cast into the void. That's just what I happen to think about that type of leadership.
And I don't have to worry about what history thinks, because when history's written, I'll be dead. I mean, those are his own words, Jim.
Well, he said that.
Yeah. They said, this is a couple of years ago. How do you think history will judge your administration? Well, I don't know, and I don't care, because when the history's written, we'll all be dead.
Well, all I can say is this. He ought to realize that, you know, victory has 100 fathers, defeat is an orphan, and that basically what he has is an orphan-type situation. And, you know, more and more, as time passes and as more money is being spent and more innocent people are being slaughtered on both sides, that he has set his mind on this course and nobody's going to change it, and he's going to use every type of subterfuge he can to circumvent any efforts to, you know, ameliorate the situation, because he certainly doesn't want anybody on the opposition getting credit for anything good.
Do you think there's anybody in the high brass that has the nerve to look at him and say enough is enough? Or does that is that culture so preoccupied with personal advancement that you lose all of that at that rarefied level?
Well, I think General Shinseki was one, and I know that when General Shinseki was at West Point, his faculty advisor was John Jacobs, who is frequently on IMUS, and Jacobs is a retired lieutenant, full colonel, a Medal of Honor winner in Vietnam, and he spoke very highly of Shinseki, not only as a student, but also of his judgment as an officer after he left the academy and ascended the rank of the military hierarchy.
How old do you suppose Shinseki is, Jim?
I don't know. I would hope that he's enjoying his retirement, and hope he's being able to say, I told you so, and I hope that...
No, I mean, is there any precedent in the American military for calling the brass out of retirement?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I mean, they call people out of retirement. Before.
I mean, Casey's a failure, Pace is a failure, Abizade is a failure, and you know, to be charitable, these guys were thrust into these situations. They're climbers, okay? They didn't get to where they were by being passive. But they were put into a miserable, intractable situation. Is that is one of the fundamental problems that these guys are still convinced that there is some sort of military solution to this dilemma?
I don't think any more than there was in 1944 in the German general staff after Stalingrad. After Stalingrad, they knew the war, they knew the jig was up, and they were all afraid to say, with the exception of a brave few like von Stauffenberg and some of the other members of the July 20th plot who tried to blow Hitler to glory or to
perdition.
Perdition, yes. But I don't think that, you know, there are so many of them who are scared to say that the emperor is naked. And that's the situation.
Because your entire career comes down around your shoulders, and one pay grade on the general staff. What's that a month on your retirement?
Well, it isn't good, and it's just like, I think it was your friend Sarge in the Low Country who said, you know, when you're in the military, you're in a catch-22 situation because, you know, you're not under civilian law, you're under UCMJ, and you have to stat to and, you know, have three answers. Yes, sir, no, sir, no excuse, sir.
It's kind of sad because it seems that we have been put in exactly that, a catch-22, where we wind up with a broken military because the military itself doesn't feel like it can morally or ethically look George Bush in the eye and say, you know, you broke it, you can't play anymore.
Well, I mean, you know, these guys over there probably kind of feel like Rommel's Africa Corps. Once the tide of the fortune of war had begun to reverse and Hitler was no longer interested in that theater of operations, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they were just left there. And they couldn't be supplied. You know, their best general was taken from them. And what was once one of the most glorious elements of the German army, one of the more decent elements of the German Wehrmacht, they were left to fend for themselves, essentially. And I think that probably the same type of spirit of, and I'm going to use the word defeatism, I would dare say is beginning to spread in our, among the ranks of our troops because they realize the exact hopelessness of a situation. I mean, when you get to the point where hope against hope becomes hope abandoned, it's like Sarge said, you're just not going to want to think too much about having all these bullets thrown at you when you know that you're not going to come out of this alive. Or you're going to be hopelessly maimed and crippled. And if you do make it back over the pond, back home, you're not going to be taken care of. They're going to find some excuse to take your benefits away or to decrease those benefits. And, you know, they're in a, instead of being, you know, in a, what the military optimally calls a win-win situation, that win-win situation, in spite of JDAMs and wonder weapons and things of that nature, has turned into a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, because as soon as the administration gets done with its war on the Iraqi people, they're going to turn around and start making war on the veterans.
And what I think is basically this, and I'm using the analogy between Germany and World War II and this country and this war, we are beginning to lose and hemorrhage. And, you know, that hemorrhage is going to, we're going to be bled white economically.
Well, that was borne out, wasn't it, Jim, in Bush's own statement today that, well, you know, I don't, and the statement to the Washington Post, we're not winning, but we're not losing, but we're going to succeed. We're going to succeed. You know, at some point in time, this begins to resemble Dorothy clicking her heels, doesn't it?
Well, it's just like Hitler, victory or death, and commanding divisions that no longer exist. It's the same thing. I mean, George Bush, in my opinion, and I may be wrong, is beginning to command with authority. He may have that authority, but the respect that supports it is gradually eroding to the point where it's going to be non-existent. And I fear, for the sake of our own military and the spirit of the troops and their ability to have faith in themselves and their leaders, that it's just going to be... it's going to result in a total collapse. It's going to have a worse and more deleterious effect on our military than Vietnam ever did. I mean, you just can't win wars like that with these so-called wonder weapons and things of that nature, and just pure technology. And not any more than the Germans could have won World War II with their V2s and buzz bombs and.
Or the Messerschmitt Comet, or
V2s and all this other stuff. It's jet planes. It's all be. It's, you know, at this point, it's too little, too late. And at the risk of repeating myself, I do feel, in my humble opinion, that our presence there is no longer palliative. It is punitive, and it is very much likened to a thorn that's in a wound. And that wound is not going to heal until the thorn is withdrawn. And the more quickly, the better. And you can call it cut and run. Sometimes you have to make what I call a strategic withdrawal until it becomes not a retreat, but a rout.
Well, there's great danger.
That's how my mind processes information like this. Now, there may be other people out there who don't agree with me or who can see it in a different way.
Jim, I tell you, in the God's honest and unfly-blown truth, I would, honest to God, I would trust you on the general staff more than I trust John Abizade right now, because your vision is clear, and it is freighted with common sense and not some fantasy land goal of achieving the nigh impossible.
But, you know, I don't want to see a repeat of what happened to Napoleon in Russia.
And in more modern terms, I don't want to see a Dien Bien Phu in the green zone.
Well, that's precisely what's going to happen.
But if we concentrate 35,000 more troops there, that's what we're setting ourselves up for.
Right. And you're just throwing more poker chips into the shim of the fair table or the gaming table. And you're just going to lose because the odds are against us. And that's just, you have to sometimes admit, look, I've made a bad investment. I can't put any more money in this. I'm going to have to get out as quickly as I can, post haste. And it may come to the simple point that the only solution to the problem is we're going to have to leave the same way we came. We're going to have to get in the opposite direction, get in the truck, start the key, get in the plane, start the engine, and start taking these people out. And just saying, look, we have made a mistake, and we are going to have to withdraw because we can no longer sustain this war in terms of manpower or money. It's a bad investment. The investment has gone kaplooey. Of course, George Bush is known throughout his life for being an expert in bad investments now, isn't he?
Well, sure. Arbusco, Spectrum 7, Harkin Energy, yeah.
And he has taken the same principles that have guided his own life, and he's always had somebody to bail him out. But, you know, hey.
Now he's alone on the world stage, and there's nobody in the prompter's booth.
That's the kind of president he's going to be remembered as. And, you know, he, I think, doesn't have the ability to admit that he's made a mistake. I mean, even when he was governor of Texas, he was extremely intractable and would not admit an error. And, you know, he's the kind of person who...
Yeah, and you know, it's one thing, Jim, when your next-door neighbor's that way. It's an entirely different matter when the person who's that way holds the lives of millions in his hands.
I mean, I just had to, less than 2 weeks ago, send a Christmas card to my first cousin's son, who is in Iraq. And I really did not know what to tell him. He's a PSC in the Marine Division there, 1st Marine Division there, I believe. And I didn't know what to tell that boy.
What do you say? I mean, my gripe is not with the enlisted ranks. I mean, there have been some very, very horrific acts, and those people should be punished accordingly. But you know, when you're, you know, those guys are in the Alfred Lord Tennyson position, where ours is not to question why, ours is but to do and die. I can't have a gripe with those guys.
The only thing I could tell that young man was, number one, I was very proud of his service to his country, and having spent a majority of my life doing some of the stuff he's doing and supporting those people who do, how much I respected those men and women who stood on that wall and provided the blanket of freedom under which we sleep. And the only thing I could end the card with was saying to him, I trust that, God and also your relationship with your buddies and your commanders will come to a solution which will allow you to return to the bosom of your family.
I don't think I don't think there's really any more that can be reasonably said, do you?
No, but like I say, we have sustained what happened to the German army in 1943, Stalingrad, and in the handwritings on the wall.
There are children yet unborn in this country, Jim, who will serve in a military yet undreamt of,
and
that will reap the consequences of what's going on now.
And, you know, and one more thing that I would just like to add, if we could take the money that we're spending over there, and if those funds could go to places like St. Jude's Hospital, the one that Danny Thomas founded, or if it could go to the areas that have been devastated by Katrina, and if we could begin to heal the wounds that are just suppurated. I mean, we don't have cuts and gashes. We have open suppurating wounds in this country that are literally tanks that are like shankers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're literally running with pus. I mean, I hate to be descriptive, but that's exactly what it's like to me.
Yeah, the stench of gangrene is becoming apparent in many sectors of American society.
That's what I'm trying to say. You know, it's becoming gangrenous, and, you know, for God's sake, apply treatment before the only solution is amputation.
Well, how can you look at the Katrina recovery and not think of necrosis?
Well, that's exactly what it is. The whole mentality of the entire leadership up there is necrotic. It's just basically everything it touches, it's like a bite from that one of those snakes in which the venom causes a necrosis or the rotting of the flesh. And the only thing they can do, because it won't heal, is to remove it.
Keep cutting it out until, yeah.
Before we actually, you know, kill the patient.
Jesus.
I mean, I feel, quite frankly, that, you know, the body of this country is on an operating table, and I don't have a lot of faith in the surgical teams that have been called in.
No, the surgical team's the Marx Brothers.
Well, it's just, I mean...
I know.
I have more faith in people like Dr. Mengele than I would some of these people. I hate to say it. I never thought I would say this, and I feel like I'm almost treasonable in saying so, but, you know, I find myself in the position that a lot of the German general staff did when they realized, oh my God, we have bitten off more than we can chew, and there's only one way that we can do this, and that is to remove this idiot as quickly as possible, get him out of power, and to bring an end to this thing so that we can rebuild and heal our country. That's the only
thing. Well, Jim, thank you for your perspective. I appreciate it, and you know, I wish that a lot more Americans put the time and the thought into these situations that you do.
Now, let me
tell you
something. I have actually talked with men above field grade,
mm-hmm,
as a civilian about stuff like this, and they agree with me.
Yeah, the problem is they can agree with you, but they can't dare share the thoughts that agreement is founded upon with the guys above them, because the next thing you know, they're cashiered. You know, it's up or out.
Well, it's just like they had. It's almost like what the German army had to swear, the Führer oath.
Yeah.
And that Führer oath is almost being replayed in the lack of ability of bright officers to say, look, we can't do this anymore. And the people who are in the position to do anything are just going to be like Field Marshal Keitel, who they call him Lack Keitel because he was Hitler's lackey.
Yeah.
And that's what we have, is a bunch of lackeys up there. And I hate to say that. God knows I did. I never thought I would say that.
But when you reach that point and you don't say it, your silence becomes complicity, doesn't it?
Under the law, silence betokens consent. You well know.
Yeah, Exactly. Jim, I've got a couple more callers I've got to get to, but I thank you for your thoughts. I thank you very much.
Good night, sir.
Take care. And Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, doing all right. I didn't get to see it, but how did you enjoy the thing I sent you from about them catching L. Brent Bozo?
Oh, was it? You know, he never ceases to amaze me. What is his parent? What is it? The Parents TV Resource Center? Or
the Family Research.
Media Research Center. Yeah.
It's like it was interesting. Combs actually showed a backbone apparently for a few seconds.
Yeah, but that, you know, that never
it
lasts.
Last, but hey.
It's crispy. It's crispy and crunchy like the backbone in a sardine.
No, I wrote to Mr. Kurtz this week on his, you know, on his media talk.
Oh, Howie?
Yeah, Howie. Of course, Howie didn't use my question, but you know, the one I loved was it was the one from people in New Jersey that said, "Why do we keep having people who are wrong on Iraq giving advice on TV?" The Meet the Press this week had a politician and two Times columnists who have all been constantly wrong. You know, so why not have like Russ Feingold, Bob Herbert, or Paul Krugman?
Well,
but instead, of course, they had Friedman, Brooks, and Gingrich.
Sure, and you know, would it be too much to ask to get one of the very few people who were against the war from the very beginning and predicted all of this? I mean, you know, we're not talking Karnak here.
No. Well, you know, it's like they all say, "Well, y'all didn't want us to go in." It's like I said, look, I talked to somebody I know, and I said, look, we said going in, we could beat Saddam. That's no big deal. I mean, you know, 6 weeks. We knew we could beat what he had because he had very little left. But that wasn't the fight. That wasn't the real fight. That was just the opening salvo, so to speak. The real fight was when we sat back and watched them sit there and pillage every office in downtown Baghdad, except, of course, for the oil ministry, which we guarded like Fort Knox.
Yeah.
You know,
five 5,000-year-old cuneiform tablets shattered to dust in the streets because of the looting of the Baghdad Museum.
What was it? Where they were found them that they'd broken into the place where they stored radiological supplies.
Oh God, yeah. But of course,
I tell you what, the one I sent you today is the thing from the guy who does the Washington talk, Fruitman. I can't think what it was. He had his year in review thing. And it was amazing looking back on that story. You know, he had links to all of his different stories. All the crap that went on this past year that people have forgotten. You know what I mean?
It's hard to keep up. Honest to God, it is.
But like I say, for instance,
Luke, I mentioned this story to Jim a little bit earlier. You know, the Pentagon says it wants $99.7 billion more for the wars. Part of that 99.7, $9.8 billion of that is the money for training and equipping the Iraqi security forces. Now, isn't it just a little bit coincidental that they want $9 billion more? At some point in time, would it be too much to ask the Congress to stand up and look at George Bush and the Pentagon and say, well, I'll tell you what, that $9 billion you want for equipping the Iraqi security forces, ask Paul Bremer where the hell it is. Because that's how much that man lost in cash.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's got to the point now. It's like $99.7 billion. Okay,
if you
now we're going to reduce those tax cuts, $99.7 billion.
If you or me were given $200 in the cash deposit bag to drop off at the night deposit window at the local savings and loan on the way home from work, Luke, we'd be out of a job and facing criminal charges.
I know. You know, it's one of those things. It's like, when you sit back and you look at this stuff, and it's like, you know, well, what were you people thinking? You know, it's like I love the story, you know, the stories. You know, I remember them showing one time was some house that they broke into and were taking the walls apart. And this is, I guess, was one of Saddam's hiding places. And were bringing out bundles of money as big as TV sets. You know what I mean? I mean, these were like
shrink wrapped
square.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, where'd that go? Just for curiosity's sake, I'm just curious where it went. Because if it went back to the Iraqis, good, there's the money to buy your weapons.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing, though. We had a Republican Congress that never asked even one question, Luke.
I know.
Not one question. They want $41.5 billion to cover the costs of ongoing military operations, okay? Out of $100 billion, they want $41 billion. That's just for the war. $26 billion is for replacing and repairing equipment that they left on the side of the road. $10 billion is for body armor and other equipment. See, they tuck those things in there because that way the Republicans can say, see, they won't support body armor for the troops. And I hate them for it. I just loathe them. I despise them for this kind of crap. You know, three years into the war, and they're just figuring out that we're short body armor. $2.5 billion to combat roadside bombs. With what? More bodies.
Well, you know, it's like that thing I sent to you a couple of months ago. You know, here's that Israeli system, you know, that essentially is used to defeat, like, RPGs. That apparently was very easy, you know, that apparently had like a 90% success rate. Our Army says, no, we can't get that. We've got a contract with a company in California, but they're going to be ready for 5 years.
Right. We can't have that because it works.
It might actually save a life or two. Oh, my gosh, how can we do that? Oh, but the one that got to me out this weekend was I was sitting watching, on Sunday mornings, I usually watch the Reliable Source just to see what stupid thing he comes up with next. And he was interviewing Dan Rather. And I was sitting there going, listening to it for a bit, and it wasn't anything specific he said, but I'm sitting there going, you know what, isn't it amazing, and this is just something that hit me, isn't it amazing how all these pundits and everybody will scream the words liberal media? And he was going after Dan Rather because some of the comments he made about O'Reilly and Fox News. He said, isn't it amazing to me all these pundits will scream the word liberal bias, liberal media? Isn't it amazing, though, if you ever listen to them, when anybody talks about bias, like at Fox or talk radio, people like Howie Kurtz start to play Twister to see how they can get away without saying anything bad about them. You know what I mean? They'll say liberal media, you know, before you even get done with your sentence. But if you want to say something bad about Fox or about right-wing talk radio, these pundits, they can't say anything.
Oh, no. They're quiet as the grave.
You know, like I said, Howie Kurtz plays Twister just to see how bad he can bend himself out of shape so he don't have to say nothing.
And, of course, you know, you got to ask yourself why he does that kind of thing, Luke. You know, and it's because... What does his wife do? She's some sort of a PR flack for some conservative think tank or something, isn't she?
Well, it's like, say, well, the other thing was, how many stories have you seen from Howie in the last 6 months since they hired Glenn Beck about Mr. Beck?
That would be none?
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
You know, or nothing but puff pieces, you know. No, and I don't understand the highly contagious nature of what's going on with that. The guy's ratings are caca, and yet he showed up twice inside a month on Good Morning America with...
apparently Good Morning America is now apparently ABC Radio apparently must be putting pressure on them. Gotta get our people on the air! Because, I mean, I've seen Hannity, I've seen O'Reilly, I've seen Beck, and I'm just assuming that some of them are connected through to ABC Radio.
Well, that is as good an explanation as anything I've seen.
But you know what I mean. But if you ever sit there and watch it, like I say, every week they have some other right winger on, and like you say, you're sitting there.
Yeah, I have yet to catch Randy Rhodes on Good Morning America.
And like I say, she lives right there in town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'll be honest, I haven't seen her on any of them. You know what I mean? But that's one of those things. It's like here you've got these people right there in town. You know what I mean? As far as I know, like Sam Cedar, that's where he lives. You know what I mean?
Sam shows up on Olbermann every now and then.
Yeah.
And that's the only place that you catch any of these people because, you know, look at, I remember the do not buy advertising list against Air America that went out. Oh, that's not real. Yeah, it was real.
Uh-huh.
And
the company just said, oh, we didn't know we were on that list. I was like, oh, yeah?
Yeah, okay, sure. Tell it to the Marines. But... there's a reason that you can't sit there, you know. People are probably sick of hearing me talk about Dennis Kucinich. Too daggum bad. The guy was right at the beginning of the war. He's right now. He will be right at the end of the war.
And where was he this weekend? Here's a guy that just announces for the presidency, and he was not. Unless I fell asleep and missed him for 5 minutes. I thought at least they'd have him in a 5-minute segment on CBS.
Yeah, he's a dynamic speaker. He is earnest. He has got integrity. He's probably got more integrity than he's in his little finger than the entire Republican Congressional Caucus. And yet somehow, I think at the end of the day, the Matthewses and the Russerts are scared of a Dennis Kucinich because he is far more intelligent than they are.
This is true. You know, I mean, it's one of those things when you sit here some nights, and I was sitting here, and I've got the mute on, hallelujah, because I don't want to listen to it. But I was sitting here watching Hardball, and I'm sitting there going, and you know, and it's like, you're just sitting there looking at him, sometimes at Matthews, you're just going, can we please have you take an IQ test, just for the curiosity of it? I really am curious if you make...
It doesn't even have to be a fancy one. You can do one of those online tickle tests. The pop-up ads are all over creation.
Oh, I tell you what. But, the one that got to me, also talking about the mainstream media, you know, they're about to convince me I'm going to vote for Hillary because they want a horse race. That's why you're seeing Barack Obama everywhere.
Oh, God, yeah, the Obama thing today, this Debbie Schlussel.
Mm-hmm.
This...
Well, the thing that got to me, though, was about Hillary was this thing with Newsweek. Oh, by the way, we have a poll that shows she beat McCain, she beat Giuliani. Oh, we aren't going to run that.
No. Barnes' fall from grace would expose the evangelical community to further charges of hypocrisy. Quote, the criticism is valid if you look at perfection being the mark, because the next person who stands at our pulpit is going to be guilty of not being perfect as well, he said. Does that mean we have to change what we say about the Word of God? We can't do that. Maybe we could study the Word of God a little bit and find out that all those passages from Leviticus were written for the Levites, who were the priestly class of the ancient Hebrews, who were barely literate. And this is not me saying this. Lewis Black, great comedian, describing the Hebrews, his own people of that period, said they were 10 hairs away from being baboons. Now, that's not anti-Semitism. It's not anti-anything. That's just Lewis Black. He's a funny guy. But, yeah, semi-literate, rarely bathing, civilization being a very... The difference between civilized and uncivilized being the tissue damn thin. Maybe we could start looking at that holy scripture in the light of civilized people. But they won't. You heard it from Elder Parker, or whatever his name is. Palmer. Elder Palmer. Nope. They're going to go on tormenting people. Torment thou them just as thou wert also tormented. Mother McCree. Oh, we've got a Jim Dandy prayer meeting going tonight, don't we? You had the story that John Fox talked about on his program last night. Maybe, you know, maybe Pastor Barnes ate too much tofu growing up. Too much soy. I didn't touch the story last night because John did such a wonderful job with it. But, you know, I've still got it sitting here in front of me, and it is mind-numbing. Mega, this is another Fundy preacher. And, you know, and I say this with no glee, we'll find out that he likes to chase little boys or watch them do things to each other. And I like, you know, straight out of the Peter Sellers line from Being There, I like to watch. We'll find out something about Jim Rutz, who is head of, where is it? Come on, help me here. Oh, yeah, chairman of Mega Shift Ministries. And, this is the guy who... There's a slow poison out there that's severely damaging our children and threatening to tear apart our culture. The ironic part is, it's a health food, one of our most popular. Now, I'm a health food guy, a fanatic who seldom allows anything into his kitchen unless it's organic. I state my bias here just so you'll know I'm not anti-health food. Now, I'm anti-health food. I can't get enough of trans fats, you know, when they... I'm really worried what's going to happen in New York when they can't. I'm going to be on the corner hustling for trans fats. The dangerous food I'm speaking of is soy. Soybean products are feminizing, and they're all over the place. You can hardly escape them anymore. I have nothing against an occasional soy snack. Some of my best snacks are soy. It's nutritious and contains lots of good things. Unfortunately, when you eat or drink a lot of soy stuff, you're also getting substantial quantities of estrogens. Dumbass, they're phytoestrogens. Oh, yeah, this is just rich stuff. How did we get here? Was that the question I started out with somewhere around a quarter past the hour? How did we get here? We got here with the help of Jim Rutz. P.S., this is the end of the article. Great googly moogly. P.S., soy sauce is fine. Unlike soy milk, it's perfectly safe because it's fermented. Well, good. Thank God it's... Okay, so fermentation makes it... Because it's fermented, which changes its molecular structure. Miso, natto, and tempeh are also okay, but avoid tofu! No more tofu! It's wiping out the clergy, the tofu!